call from mom. Answer it. Call silence.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Happy hump day, everybody. Boy, do I have a treat for you. Today's episode, Joey Coco Diaz, Tom Segura, John Moore, and my buddy Adam Ridley. Go to BurtBurtBurt.com. Enjoy.
This is the BurtCast.
Some clothes, you know. And this kid is just screaming, throwing ties off the racks and everything. And then he just takes off running at a full clip. Straight down the aisle, and at the end of the aisle was a full-length mirror. He didn't realize it was a mirror, and he runs at a full clip into this mirror, just smack, and just kind of steps back. Didn't know what happened. Like, he could not understand physics.
It makes you feel
and,
so good.
Oh, man, I loved it. I could not have been more happy. He shut up the whole time. So I think he had, like, a concussion or something. He was
I love that that's how we're time. Starting off the podcast, is with John's hateful story about a child.
Well, some kid, because you have great kids, but some people's kids really suck so bad.
Yeah.
And, like, it's like when you – there's one thing, like, you know, it's hard when you first see – kids that you realize they really are ugly, you know, and you want to tell people, because you could say it to somebody, you can't tell the parent, like, that's an ugly kid. Or when a kid's a real asshole and you enjoy watching them get hit, you know, like that is the best.
It's like I had my buddy, my old roommate had a dog, Hagen, mm-hmm. I think was the dog's name, after Copenhagen.
A shitty dog. And,
yes, a chocolate lab, like half breed. It's like just ears looked weird, nose was too long, but he spent like a dickload of money for it. He was in college. And I remember watching the dog piss on his bed one time, and I should have stopped the dog, but I fucking enjoyed it so much that I almost was like, how can I get the dog to piss on his bed every fucking time?
That's the you know the thing about people with shitty dogs? People who have like a really shitty dog will act like they know how to train dogs. Like, they'll tell you, like, you know what you got to do? And you're like, dude, your dog sucks. Your dog has no obedience. You haven't trained it at all. But they'll be like, this is when you need to pet him and you should reinforce. But like, do you do any of it?
No. Nope.
Do you do anything at all to your dog? Your dog's a fucking... It's like an untamed beast, and you're...
Wait, are we talking about my dog?
No, your dog. That dog's
Joey came in today, and Priscilla gave him, like, the sniff, and then she was looking at him, and Joey's like, this is what she's supposed to do. This is what a dog does.
What a dog does. Yeah. You know, people get mad at that. You know, once I go in your house, it becomes that dog's property.
Yeah.
And you have to act like... And if not, you're going to get fucking bit.
Yeah.
And that goes for kids, too. You're going to get fucking bit, and that's it. You know, people don't know the mechanics of a dog. You know why I know the mechanics of a dog? I used to be a burglar. You know exactly why the fucking dog is there. Plus, before I became a burglar, when I was a kid and I first came from Cuba, I kept getting attacked by dogs. You know, like, I lived in the Bronx. My mother had a dry clean in the Bronx. I got bit in the face. I got bit in Harlem in the leg. I got bit in Jersey. And I couldn't figure out what the fuck it was, so I just... broke down around dogs. Like, the fear I had. One dog walked past me one time with his owner, walked like 10, and then turned around and bit me. That's when you know you're a retard. When the dog turns around and comes back and bites you. Like, you're such a loser kid. And I was about 8 or 9. You know? But it's, you know, once you...
You walk past the dog's like, oh, fuck it.
He came back and bit me. Fucking two German Shepherds. You know, and it's amazing how when you see, like, I respect dogs. I respect animals, you know. That's my biggest fear. I was walking to Yum Yum Donuts one night, and some guy had his pit bull off the fucking chain on Colfax. That dog came right up to me. He could have just tore my fucking leg off. But it was the respect that I gave him that saved my fucking leg. Joe Rogan, Frank, almost tore me up one time. Yeah. But I learned how to just maintain. And it's the inner thing. It's like when you pick up a cat. If you pick up a fucking cat hard, that cat's going to be hard. But I pick my fucking cats up like nothing, and that's, they feel the love in your hand.
I never realized how fucking how bad I would do against like a bear or a lion until one time I had to get our cat into a flying crate, like put him in one of those crates, take him to the vet. And our cat, Gus, just decided to fuck me up. And all of a sudden, I have a cat that is grabbed onto me and just going, and I'm like, I fucking was like, I don't know what to do. And it hurt so fucking bad that I thought if that was a lion, I'd be fucking dead.
Oh, yeah.
There's not only, like, there, it's the fucking, that cat-like instinct. So,
do you remember that guy at the X show?
Yeah, Sean. That got bit by a dog.
Yeah.
What was his
name? Sean, I think his name was Sean Finkel.
That's exactly what his name was. Is that what his name was?
Yeah, one of the producers got a rescue dog. A rescue dog. It was an adult German Shepherd. Nobody knew anything about this dog. It was an adult, a rescue. And he would bring it into the office. Hadn't had it a week. And Sean, he was like a, you know, he was a good-looking guy, wanted to be an actor. And he comes in. Gets right in the dog's face and starts rubbing the face right there. And it just took a bite out of his face. God, there was blood all over the office. He had to get stitches, plastic surgery.
There's a very, this is a disputable story in my family right now. Cotty got bit by a dog. We had a dog, Arthur, who was on heart medicine. And she was in my room and she, and he was sleeping and she was, he was a Jack Russell Terrier. And he was like, she was like in his face and like this. And all of a sudden in the middle of the night, he just, and bit her face, got her right in the eye and inside her mouth.
Oh, inside the mouth.
And locked on. And we had to, I had to get him off. And then my dad, I go take Cotty into my dad's and mom's room. And I'm like, Arthur bit Cotty. They gave her like 2 seconds. And then my dad disappeared with Arthur. Took him out. Yeah. To the porch and he came back and he had a bite in his hand. He's like, don't go out there. I was like, okay. Next morning, Arthur is in a basket being sent to live on a farm. They put him in a basket because that was the and my dad's hosing off the fucking porch. And I, to this day, I think my dad killed Arthur with a baseball bat.
No doubt.
To this day.
No doubt.
To this day. And my dad always goes, no, buddy, you have a fucking active imagination. I never told you Will Smith wanted to fuck you in the ass. I didn't kill Arthur with a baseball bat. That's how my dad sees life. I'm like, bullshit, you fucking killed Arthur with a baseball bat.
I'll get it out of him next time he's here.
I know a guy.
Like, I'll pull him aside. Say, hey, just between me and you. I won't tell Bert. Did you kill that dog?
I know a guy who had a bird that he loved his bird. And his brother's dog, he was supposed to lock up. The brother's supposed to like keep the dog locked up when the house is empty so the dog doesn't fuck with any of the other.
Yeah.
His dog killed the bird.
Right? Oh, shit.
This guy loved this fucking bird. He took the dog when he got home and found his bird dead. He was so livid that he drowned the dog in the pool with his with his hands and left him to
fucking die. That is hardcore.
Yeah. And he was like, fuck you and fuck your fucking dog. And like,
shut the
no
fuck
word.
Up.
Yeah. Like,
I, my dog, my, that same dog, Hagen. Killed. I had an iguana in college named Wilbury after the traveling Wilburys. And I came home one day. I had a dog, Abigail. My buddy Obi had a dog named Hagen. And I come back, and Wilbury is in his cage, and he's dead, my iguana. And I'm like, oh, fuck. And I just thought I didn't feed it. And Obi's there, and he's like, what's the matter? And I was like, Wilbury's dead. And he was like, oh, shit, I guess you didn't feed it in a while. And I was like, yeah, I guess I didn't. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry about that. And I was like, yeah. He's like, what are you going to do? And I'm like, he goes, what are you going to do? And I was like, I guess I'll just cremate it. Because I was like, I don't want to bury it because then the dogs are going to dig it up. I was like, I'll cremate it. So
just with one match?
No. I got some paper and I wrapped it up in newspaper.
No.
And I got some lighter fluid and I lit it and it fucking in the fireplace. It flamed up good. I mean, it was a blaze until the paper pulled away and there's still an iguana that's filled with liquid and the liquid's sizzling and squirting out of his eye and his toes are bent back and his tail's all curled up. His lips were like this, like, And I fucking felt so horrible. I just felt like fucking, I disfigured this animal that I loved that I had to go take it outside and bury it out there. It was the fucking worst.
Yeah.
But, and then Obi says to me like 2 weeks later, he's like, "You still upset about Wolverine?" And I said, "No, I'm past it." And he goes, "Well, just so you know, Hagen killed it." And I was like, "What?" And he goes, "I saw him playing with him and I walked in and I just put him back in the cage. I figured I didn't want to tell you." So.
How'd he get out of the cage?
He was a big iguana. He could get out.
Wow.
Yeah. Is everyone watching this Beyonce? Should I turn it off?
Yes.
I guess I should do an intro in the man cave today. Tom Segura.
Yo.
John Moore, executive producer of the hit show Joe Schmo. Right, John?
Yeah.
And Joey Coco Diaz.
What's happening, guys?
We have, that was a late intro. Apologize. And then supposedly, I'm almost certain it's going to happen. Adam Richman from Man vs. Food should be here. So we can all interview Adam.
Who has to give up their mic?
What?
John, I'll give up.
John.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. the one guy who's consistently, every time people go, John did the last one like he was singing the blues. He was like, ah. So he did the whole podcast and no one could understand him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What was I doing? What do you mean
you
singing
the
blues?
Down here.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're getting much better at it.
Well, you know, I've done a few since then. I've done like 12 since then.
Let's talk about how fucking fantastic his show is then.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that.
No, not yet.
Jesus. John, pitch it.
Now, who sold Joe Schmo?
Dude, what it is, it looks like a reality show. One guy comes to compete for the grand prize of $100,000 and a year's contract to be a bounty hunter. Everybody else he's competing against are actors. He doesn't have any idea. And they're just messing with him.
So it's a prank
show
on one dude.
Now, what's the kid that created this?
A guy named Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick created it 10 years ago, and we did it 2 seasons back then.
Right.
Then it went away.
Now, who was the kid from the Best Damn Sports Show that works on there? Glasses, curly
hair. Brian Keith Etheridge.
BKE.
Now, BKE.
Created or had
No. He was one of the writers on the first season, okay. And he was an actor on the first season.
Okay.
He's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, he's funny. He's funny, yeah. He wasn't available this year, but...
He's a funny, good dude, man.
Yeah, he's a trip.
He's so funny. Yeah. And he's such a nice guy.
And he's a great drummer, too. Did you know that?
He is?
Yeah.
I heard.
Yeah.
And a sensual lover.
Like, he went to...
Very generous lover.
Yeah, very generous lover. But he went to USC and got, like, his degree in music.
Really?
Yeah. He's got a band. Anyway, so this one guy thinks he's on a real reality show, and he's not. And it's just, he's there with all the actors. And he doesn't know... Like, we put this guy through the mill, and he just thinks all this craziness is going on. We had a black character named Lavernius, named after your boy.
My joke, named after
Lavernius
Coles. Yeah.
Yeah.
I went to school with Lavernius Coles at Florida State, and I loved his name. I thought it was the greatest. I think we had a class together, and I remember them saying, "Lavernius," and I thought that was a joke name. I started laughing, and then he was like, "Yeah," and I was like, "Oh, I'm sorry."
It's great. This guy, Lavernius, he's like a big black guy. Kind of like this, you know, scary type reality show black guy they had on every one of them. And he pulls him aside like the first night and says, "Yo, we're friends. We should stick together." And the guy's like, "Yeah, sure." And he goes, "By the way, I got to tell you something. I'm gay." And he tells him this long story about his boyfriend, Ray Ray. And he's like, "Now don't tell anybody
Another
else."
Another name out of my act.
Is that
yeah,
Ray Ray? Cool. I didn't know that. So he tells me, he goes, "Now don't tell anybody. It's just between you and me. I don't want people to know. I don't know how they'll accept me." Then the next day, we've got the single mother, the widow, comes to him and is like, "Man, I'm in love with Lavernius. What can I do to get Lavernius? I think he wants me." And he's just put in the middle. He can't tell her because he can't, you know, screw up with his friendship. And he gets into this weird love triangle. Everywhere he goes, this chick is like, "Hey, man, I really need to get with Lavernius. I think he likes me."
So wait, are you line editing this? Or are you in a video village watching this?
Yeah, we're watching. We've got a whole.
So are you losing
everything.
Your fucking mind when two jokes that you've set up for a period of time collide, and she's like, and you're watching?
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And like the weirdest thing for me was the table read, because when they all got together for the table read, like 6 months ago, these characters didn't exist.
Yeah,
and here they are. When you're a writer and that happens, it's like a mind blowing thing.
I love that show, like to a lot of Joe Schmo, because everything is done so well, has to go so well on so many different levels for it to work.
Oh yeah,
but there's a blind chick on the show, and apparently
deaf.
Blind would be.
Yeah, we got.
I guess she could just close her eyes and really do it.
One of our contestants, she's not deaf in real life, but she's playing a deaf girl. on the shows. He's like, I'm fighting to be a bounty hunter with a deaf girl. You know, it's just all ridiculous.
She's fantastic.
She's great.
Yeah. But the writing, like, you guys have to like come up with the concept. Those people execute it. And then I feel like a huge factor is casting the right guy.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's so
He's got to be dumb enough.
And sincere. And you got to be like
a good dude.
Good dude.
He's not. Yeah, you got to be a good dude. But he's not dumb. That's what everyone thinks. He just doesn't know.
Yeah, but I'd figure it out pretty quick.
No, you wouldn't. No,
I'd
you wouldn't.
Figure it out.
There's no way, because all he's going by is the information he's giving.
Is he from L.A.?
No. He's from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
He's got his master's degree.
No, I'm not. I'm going to Pittsburgh next week. I'm not saying they're dumb, but I'm saying he couldn't be from like L.A. or New York or somewhere because he'd fucking catch
on. He'd be a little more savvy. But, you know, if you just walk in a room, somebody would just walk in this room and, you know, I would say, you know, I've been in prison for 3 years. There's no reason for him not to believe that because he doesn't have, you know.
Greatest line Joey Diaz ever delivered in person to me. We were talking about black people, and he goes, dog, if you think brothers are allowed in the movies, go to prison. I fucking laughed. It was me, you, and Felicia Michaels, and I could not stop laughing. Oh, Felicia didn't really hear it. Like, she didn't catch it. Yeah. And I could not. And then Joey just continues telling a story. I go, no, go back to that. The greatest fucking line. Wait, into the mic, Joey.
It's amazing. When you go to jail, they talk all night black people. Like, I couldn't figure it out. Like, you go to, first you go to, like, you get sentenced. And they take you to county jail. Uh-huh. And then after you're in county jail, after a week, they go, listen, we're going to send you to where you're going to go. But first you have to go to diagnostic, to like a prison where they test your head and they draw blood and all that shit. And you're there for 2 weeks. Then they decide where they're going to send you according to your points and what crime you did and previous. And if you have a high school diploma, there's all these variables. And once they send me to diagnostic, that's what it's called. Nobody sleeps there. I went to diagnostic in August, which is fucking Humidville in Colorado. And I was on the third floor. And there had to be, you know, it was like six floors of just cells, like you see in a movie, just all the way high up. And I remember when lights went out, they talked all night. I mean, listen, if
Do you realize how much I love that?
If you're like in the cell next to me and I'm like, yo, Bert, yo, what's up, Joey? What's going on over there? No, I'm reading a book. What are you reading about? Oh, I'm reading about physics. Yeah, tell me about it. Well,
this is clearly a made-up one. Or what are you doing over there? Reading a book about physics.
Right.
You're reading that. Something about Stephen King. I'm reading on writing.
Yeah.
You're reading and we're having a conversation about it. You know what? Whatever this appeals to, at least it's an interesting conversation. You know, how he came up with Caddy.
I feel like I know where this is going. No.
I'm excited.
But with the brothers, okay, so you and I are talking next to each other in the cell. Yeah. Like, so, John, did you read the part about Carrie, how he wrote Carrie? Whatever. It's not an intelligent, it's not going to save the world, but at least we're talking about something. The black guys. But they talk like from the second floor to the fourth. And it's like, yo, Moby. And it's got to travel. So Moby's in his room, right? Moby's in his room, whatever. Picking his fucking afro or greasing his ears or putting Vaseline on their calves. Whatever the fuck they do. And all of a sudden he's like, oh, shit, Moby, that must be me. So now he has to get up and go to the thing and go, yo, Moby here. So now the guy downstairs forgot he already yelled up to Moby. He's going to say, Moby, oh, yo, Moby, what's going on up there? And then Moby has to yell back, nothing, dog, you know, just doing time like a motherfucker. All right. You know, and this goes on for hours, like, yo, so you got visiting on Sunday? Nah, I got my baby's mama, number one. The fat hoe's coming because the white one don't like black. You know, and it goes on forever. And you're sitting there in bed going, you just want to get up and go, oh, does this matter? Are we saving fucking lives? And let's say you fall to sleep at 2. Let's say you fall asleep at 1. When you get up at 4, they're still having the same conversation. Moby and Ray Ray are still fucking, you know, yo, so tell us what happened in high school. And they just talk. Oh. And it's all fucking night, guys.
Oh, my God.
And they don't sleep in the daytime. Oh. Black people rest to talk. I went to Popeye's about 2 years ago. I went to Popeye's Chicken on Laurel Canyon. And this ain't a racist statement. This is a true statement. I went in there with my wife. Right here, Laurel Canyon.
Yeah, I know the Popeyes.
Laurel,
yeah.
Tremendous Laurel Canyon. But what a lot of people don't know is Tuesdays is $1.99. You get a wing and a breast.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which I means do that. Black people go fucking bananas on Tuesday. Like on Wednesday, if you're white and you get up in the Mickey Mouse Club, it was anything could happen day. Yeah. For black people, it's what's today, Tuesday. Oh, shit. It's going down at Popeyes, right?
We went to Popeyes, that Popeyes.
On a Tuesday.
You ever go on a Tuesday? Meeting, it was the day before my fast.
Packed. But here's the beauty of it. There was a guy in Popeyes eating chicken on the phone the whole time while he was eating chicken. After a while, if I'm black and I'm sitting there, I'm going, what are you doing? You eating chicken? Why are you talking to me about eating chicken? I'm over here eating fucking diet root beer. Call me back when you with the chicken. He talked throughout the whole conversation while he was eating the three pieces of chicken. Me and my wife stayed there. I'm like, my wife's like, we got to go. No, we're not. Yeah. We're going to watch this whole conversation go down. This is what reality TV should be.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking some guy hunting a bull in Spain. This is it. This black guy on the phone. He didn't even stop and go, let me call you back when he asked the chick for hot sauce. You know how they always stop? Yeah, like, I'm going to take two bites. Like, something's missing this motherfucker. Like, hot sauce, that's right. He didn't even get off the phone. My point being, he ate chicken. Like, if I don't know about you guys. I can't eat and talk. When I'm eating, I'm fucking eating. I don't want to talk to nobody. Yeah. There ain't nobody in the world I want to talk to when I'm eating. Sure. This guy was eating his favorite meal and didn't even give up, take 5 minutes off. He just talked. Throughout the whole thing, it was an hour for three pieces of chicken. So, I got nowhere to go with this. I'm just
no. John watched me eat today, and I eat like a fucking wolf.
Yeah, you eat like you're in prison.
I eat like I'm in prison.
You eat like you're scared everyone around you is going to take your food. I've never seen anything like it.
I was the fastest eater that I had ever been around.
Who? Myself.
Me. I finished, and you are at least three times as fast.
Really?
It's crazy, man. Yeah.
No, I mean, he eats like there's a prize at the bottom of it or something. Like, you are going nuts.
Yeah, I eat really fast. But that was
takes two bites of her meal, and I'm already, the waitress is taking my dish.
Oh, and I'll tell you what else. I have a real fucking thing about my food being hot. Like, I need my food to be hot. Almost burnt. Yeah, I can't have, like, if it starts to cool down, it's ruined. In my opinion, I like, it's meant to be served hot.
Yeah.
So, Leanne, it was a big hiccup in our relationship when we first got married because I'd make dinner for us and she'd be like, especially with the girls, she's like, I'll be out in 15 minutes. I'm just going to put all that down. I'd be like, no. I made it now. It's on the table now. You stop what you're doing and you come now. But when we go on the road with my crew, and when it's a crew of fucking 15 people on the road, I go, the second my food gets anyone's food, you start eating. We're not fucking family. There's no fucking just – it's work. You eat and then fucking eat it because I'm not waiting for anyone.
I'm not waiting for anybody.
Yeah.
And I've finished food. I've finished straight up meals before anyone gets served.
You know when you go to a restaurant with somebody?
Yeah.
You know why I don't go to restaurants with people? Because they take too long to order.
Oh.
I'm walking in that restaurant. Drives me nuts. I want. As I'm walking in the fucking door. So when she comes over with the waters, right there. Yo, you ready to take this? No. And then you always got one fucking Momo who's doing everything but. You know, Red Man. He's doing everything. Getting the fucking menu. Because Rogan knows what he wants. I know what I want. Yeah. John knows what he wants. You're the only fucking Momo. And look at the fries. Look at the flowers. I don't give a fuck about the flowers. You better know when that bitch comes the first time, you better have your fucking order. My wife is the same way. She looks around. Look at the brickwork. I don't give a fuck.
I don't understand. One of my friends always, always gives two options to the server, and it's like, "What do you think?" And then basically lets the server decide.
Hey, fuck you.
And I'm like,
Was that me that did that? No, not that one. Do you remember when we were in Hawaii and I said to the lady, "What's good on the menu?" And she goes, "I don't know." And I go, "What do you mean you don't know?" She's like, "I don't know." And I said, "What about these?" She goes, "I don't know." I go, "You haven't had anything on this menu?" She goes, "No, they won't let us eat off the menu." And I go, and then we took it upon ourselves to go fucking hunt down management and say they need to eat for the menu because we need to know what we want to eat and their recommendation matters.
Yeah,
I remember that. That was a fucking – have you ever seen – Joey, have you ever seen the video of me shaving Tom's tits? I watched it just as on a lark and we were in Hawaii and I shaved Tom's back and then I realized that his armpit hair connected to his tit hair. Mm-hmm. So I was like –
chest also works.
Chest. So I was like, let me just shave some definition. I'll hollow this point out and then bring it up under. And I did one. And the second I did one, I looked at it and it looked like his nipples were wearing a mask. Like they were just like, because it looked like glasses on his. And I could not stop laughing and it looked so bad.
Adam's here.
Oh, good. That's a perfect time. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll edit all this out, I'm sure. Adam, come on in.
I'll keep it real.
Oh, yeah. We'll just keep it in.
Yeah.
I'm going to move back.
All right. Adam.
How are you, sir?
Good to see you, brother. This is my buddy Tommy Buns.
Hey, what's up, man?
Oh, here. Leanne. Cool. Leanne leaves the dog in here.
Come on.
Yeah. Do you want us to keep Mona? Okay. This is Tommy Buns, stand-up comedian. John Moore is executive producer of Joe Schmo, and my buddy Joey Coco Diaz. Joey and you will be simpatico. Both guys out of New York, East Coasters. Grab a mic. Yeah. Sit down.
Sit down.
We were tearing up some hot dogs last week. I was in West Palm Beach. You were tearing up some hot dogs. I'm in my room getting high, going, I wish I had some fucking hot dogs.
Joey, into the mic. Do you want anything?
I'm good. Beer. I'm good. Are we already recording?
Yeah, we just started. And we were like, yeah, Adam will roll in.
Eventually, yeah. Sorry for the delay.
No, don't worry about it, man. So Adam is in. What are you in for? You just in the party?
What am I here for? No, I came out here for some work stuff, and I have to finish writing a cookbook. I owe my publisher a bunch of recipes. There's a lot more recipes in the cookbook than I thought. I figured, 50, 60 recipes, I'm good, you know? And apparently the bare minimum for a cookbook is 85, and they want like 115.
That's like industry standard.
Yeah, and they want like 115. I just don't want it to be like douchey. That's my thing, because like I think there are so many people out in the food world that can cook so much better than I can. Can you curse on your podcast?
Yes, of course.
I'm just checking ahead of time.
Into a mic.
How do you write a cookbook? I've always wondered that.
It's like, a great question.
It's not like you don't sit there like, there was a chicken who,
totally. This is the story.
This is the story of a teaspoon of salt with a dream. This teaspoon of salt had a dream one day. No, you know what? I've written recipes in my first book, and they were kind of inspired by the places that I was writing about. And so now they want a cookbook that's kind of based on my travels and places I've been and regional things and things I've learned. But it's also just the way you experiment. I mean, people watch. They're much better chefs than me, but people watch them like they're like a burning bush, and they're just like trained cooks, and they have vast skill. But
is that your background, cooking?
Yeah, I mean, I came up. I supported myself as an actor doing the restaurant thing. But
did you get trained formally, like as a chef in New York?
The only formal training I had was for sushi.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't go to like CIA or FCI or any of the big schools like that, or Cordon Bleu, Johnston & Wales. Like those guys, really, they have a manipulation and understanding of food that I wish I had. But so in answer to your question, so like what I'll do is, first of all, I do a lot of recipes for like endorsement deals and shit like that. And so I was like, how many of these can I recycle? So I was like, 25. Nice. That gives me a head start. But I sat at the pool. I chose a hotel, the Travel Channel, and put me up at season one when we were shooting the upfront video. And it's just like the most creative space ever. And I'll think of a dish, and I'll write out a one-line description of it. And then I'll work out the mechanics of it. So, for example, there's a tortilla soup with guacamole wontons that I have in the soup. And so it's just like, well, what do I love about tortilla soup? What do I love about – I love soup dumplings. I love any of that shit. And then you just sort of conceptualize a recipe, and then I can always fine-tune it.
Can you put in like some recipes and then add a teaspoon of jizz and just to see if people catch it, like one of those hidden eggs on DVDs? Remember that? Do you remember you like
– I'm going Easter eggs.
Yeah. No. And on DVDs, they'd be like, find the egg in the corner, and it unreleases. Like, hey, are you ever thinking about doing that?
Not for jizz. I cook with far less jizz than you might think.
Isn't that cookbook all about cooking with jizz?
Are you being serious?
Yeah.
There is a cookbook that's all about cooking with placenta. I know that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently cooking with placenta. And my director of photography.
Someone's
at
home. I thought it said. Pastrami. Polenta. Oh, shit. Honey, it's going to take a while for this fucking recipe.
This
joke would have been really funny if I could come up with a fucking word. So, you came out to write your book?
Yeah, did you have Dan? Was Dan your one of your DPs
Dan
on your show?
Adler?
No.
Dan.
I don't know if I should throw him under the bus. But he was a director of photography for the same production company that did Birth to Conquer at the beginning. And his wife had a doula, and she did like a home birth. And he showed us like pictures. She was like, the kid was born on the living room floor. Shit looked like a scene from Silence of the Lambs.
How can you fucking do that?
And I don't know.
I couldn't. I couldn't do the home birth. Joey just had a baby.
Mazel tov. No?
Do you want some pretzels?
Yeah, I had some THC pretzels, so they're hitting me. 127 milligrams.
Grab those pretzels right there and read the ingredients.
I would love to. I love Anti-Dolores. Medical cannabis savory pretzels. Keep out of reach of children and pets.
But read, says, no, turn around and read the actual ingredients.
Okay.
I think it's on the back.
Oh, okay. I see some stuff on the front, but okay. Oh, here they are.
Yeah, I think the first two ingredients are really important.
Yeah, I like it. Cannabis and then pretzels. Soy sauce, rice vinegar, coconut oil, garlic powder, paprika, and onion flakes. Contains soy, wheat, but no MSG.
Oh, good. I'm worried about the MSG.
Yeah, when I have weed pretzels.
You put that recipe in your book right there.
Yeah.
The first time.
It's like, you know, they bars put pretzels so you drink more. It's like, yeah. Here's so you eat more pretzels.
I gave three of them to a stewardess last week.
You did?
Because I was eating them, and she came over. She goes, what, you don't like our pretzels? I go, no, these are vegan. Can I try one? What am I going to do? No, I had a whole fucking bag of them. This bitch started eating. She goes, they're not bad. Can I have another one? I'm thinking to myself, where's her next trip to? And at first, I didn't feel bad. I don't give a fuck. But then I was like, they could piss test this bitch.
Yeah.
And she was probably like, I haven't smoked since high school, I swear. Like, fuck you, bitch.
I got slipped acid one time in college. Me and my buddy Ozzy. And we didn't get – let me rephrase that. The guy had a drink that had acid in it. And me and Ozzy, the guy offered it to us. And we both drank it. And then he was like, there's acid in it. And so we got up to our hotel room. We were in like spring weekend in Panama City. Got up to my hotel room. I looked in the mirror, and in the mirror I saw my eye, and I saw me standing in my eye like back 100 times. And I got freaked out. I was like, the fuck? And I walk in to the room, and Ozzy's just staring at his feet. And I'm like, do you think we got slipped something? And he was like, I'm fucking losing my mind. We sat up in a bed watching the Fishing Network, like where they just caught fish all fucking night long, going, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. And then we started enjoying it. But yeah.
Wow.
Did you ever stop watching the Fishing Network?
No, we watched that the whole time. It's relaxing as shit.
Except your fate. It's fine. You know, after you go, where am I going to go? I'm here for 12 hours.
It's like Yoshi. When Yoshi, we have a friend Yoshi, who Joey has this weed banana bread that he'll bring to shows. And if you choose to eat it, you choose to eat it. Some people do, some people don't. Yoshi is one that doesn't, but he didn't know there was weed in it. So Joey says, like, I mean, that banana bread, you have like a piece, right?
No,
strong
Yoshi.
Shit. Now, when you want it, though, you don't eat a ton of it. You have a piece.
No,
good.
I just eat a whole piece. Yoshi just had a little slice.
No, no, no.
I had a piece. Yoshi had a slice.
But he ended up.
Is he Asian? Is he a Japanese man?
Yeah, he's Japanese, and he edits porn, and he does stand up
at the same time.
No, 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 no.
Because that's very efficient.
But he had like seven of these pieces or four of these pieces, and then fucking Joey was like, you didn't eat the banana bread, did you? And Yoshi's like, what's the matter with the banana bread? He's like, it's weed in it. And Tom goes, what did you do next? And Yoshi goes, I sat in my car for 7 hours.
Well, first he got on stage.
Yeah.
Yoshi did, and was like, midway through his set, he was like, oh, my legs were feeling funny.
Yeah, he was fucking, we could see it. And he kept saying, my friends got me high. And I was standing with Martin. And I go, that's the fucking banana bread.
Yeah.
He got off and I followed him. When I got off stage.
Sorry, it's just such a funny piece of deductive reasoning. Oh, it's got to be the banana.
He's sitting in the chair just like you. I walk in and he's just rubbing his thighs. And I sit next to him for comfort. And I can see that he wants to say something to me, but he can't. Like he's trying, like he's like. And he kept rubbing his thighs and he kept. And then every once in a while he'd go, Joey, what else is in this banana bread? I kept saying, just weed. But you're gonna be, it's just a little bit of weed. I didn't want to scare him. I didn't want to say you're going to be fucked up. So we get outside.
It's going to be a rough night. Yoshi.
He's holding on to the wall. He's got his claws in the fucking wall like Spider-Man. He's got a leg up. Like, you don't want to ride home? And he's like, no, no, no. And I felt bad at that point because I saw him go for it. He was hungry. It was an immediate thing.
Yeah.
He came in. He looked and he goes, ah. And all of a sudden he ate like two pieces. He's like, this tastes funny. You know, and once I see you go for it, I ain't going to say shit. You know, it's not my job to say, don't eat that. I'm no dietitian. I'm not going to stop you. The rest is up to you. You know what I'm saying?
It does have drugs in it, though.
Yeah.
It does have drugs.
Then when he told me he didn't get high, then I thought he was a friend. You come into my realm, I expect you to get high. Something. You got to do something. Well, you know, I don't trust nobody who don't get something, so I didn't know. The next day, I get up at 6 in the morning and I'm peeing. I mean, guys, I'm not lying to you. I take off my little fat sleep apnea mask on. And as I'm peeing, I'm like, fucking Yoshi, did he make it home? I really am. I've known Yoshi since 95 in Seattle. Yeah. He was a kid when he came from Japan. I go in, I call him, no fucking answer. I'm like, he's dead. And all of a sudden, right back, he called. I'm like, Yoshi, what's up? He's like, all right, Joey, I'm fine. I go, how long did it take you to get home? He goes, I just got home. It was 6 in the fucking morning. It took him 8 hours to get home from Brea to Beverly Hills. But the clinker was that he went to Carl's Jr. Did he tell you that story?
He couldn't hit a hard time finding the drive-thru. He kept driving
in circles.
He called
the employee and told him to come out. That's the clinker. He could not find the door, so he went on his iPhone, called Carl's Jr. and said, listen, give me everything on the menu. Come on out. I'll give you cash. Gave the guy like $90.
Wait. There was no drive-thru open?
He couldn't find it. He just kept
He kept driving around
it. He was so fucked up. Where do you pay here? There's nowhere to pay. So he called him and was like, I can't find how to pay. Come out and let me order from you. And they were like, what? Just through the drive-thru. He's like, I can't find it. So they came out to the parking lot and went to the window.
I guess it's like a community service at that point.
Yeah.
That's the show to pitch. Well, that's the show I want to pitch. Like, have a buffet every week and put, like, a certain product out there with THC and just wait to see what happens.
You know, like, but you, I love how you say it's not your thing, but, Bert, we travel in the same circles. We go to a lot of these sort of dog and pony shows that we have to do and, like, the meet and greets and whatever. If one of the hors d'oeuvres, like, has acid or something in it, will you let me know?
Oh, yeah. I'll give you the nod. I always think of that when I go to Starbucks, and I'm like, why wouldn't some lunatic just put a drop of acid in the, on the half and half? Or, like, you know, like, why wouldn't they?
Dude, don't put that shit on your podcast, because someone will now.
If I've thought of it, everyone have thought of it. So
I hadn't thought of it, and I've done acid. On sugar cubes, on bits of paper.
Really?
Oh, my God. I watched snow melt. I watched. It was my freshman year.
You can do that off acid, too.
Yeah, but it's not the same thing. You can't watch it on a molecular level like you can. I watched the story of snow. I kept hearing American Beauty by Grateful Dead in my head, like on loop, like again and again. It was like that one year in college when I was like, I'm gonna shake off the dust of this yeshiva, and I'm gonna take some drugs and watch Wizard of Oz with Dark Side of the Moon.
Oh, I did that many times.
Second Roy, you start the album.
Play. Yeah,
you used to do a lot of drugs in college. You OD'd, right?
Yeah.
Do you talk about that?
Oh my God.
I guess I will now.
You OD'd?
Yeah,
I OD'd when I was a freshman. I took
Vivarin.
What'd I take? I took took some E, then I took GHB, but I took a huge dose.
Yeah.
Basically took like 8 doses in one shot.
Isn't it a horse tranquilizer, GHB?
No.
You used to be able to take ketamine.
That's a special ketamine.
Yeah. You used to be able to take GHB and go to sleep. Yeah, you want a beer?
Yeah. Is this the place that the man caves dude is made for you?
Yeah, there's a man cave.
This is it.
He's like, I thought it was going to be nicer.
Not at all. No. I was supposed to get one, and I lived in a shitty basement apartment. Sure. I don't have a vagina on your podcast here. I would prefer something non-alcoholic, but you got Girl Scout cookies in here. Do you have anything non-alcoholic in here or no?
No, I actually don't.
Then I'll just have a beer.
So wait, yeah, you were going to do a man cave, right?
Then they said there wasn't enough room. It was a one-bedroom apartment. I don't know how there's not enough room in a one-bedroom apartment.
Here you go. That's so wait, so Tom, you OD'd.
I'm sorry, back to the OD.
You OD'd?
Yeah, I took a bunch of GHB. And then I drank a lot. I drank like 15 vodkas.
And holy then shit.
The alcohol and the GHB are like a fatal combo. So
15 vodkas?
Yeah, it was pretty heavy. So, but the worst part is that the reason I had so much GHB in me is because normally you take GHB, we would buy it in water bottles, and a dose, like a hit, would be filling up the cap. So that's like when you take a water bottle cap.
Yeah.
It's like – it's literally like it's just a splash. And the guy who I was like, yeah, I'm not really feeling this ecstasy, you know. He was like, well, I got some GHB in the car. But he had it in a milk jug before he put it in water bottles. So it's a full
–
like it's too heavy to like tip into a thing. So I just put it to my mouth and went like – and then I realized I had a huge mouthful.
and you couldn't spit out his drugs.
To be.
How does GHB, is it a liquid GHB?
Liquid, yeah. Yeah, it's liquid. I mean,
it's like that Woody Allen when he sneezes in the cocaine.
Yeah. I did it to not be rude.
Was it like a shot glass full? Is that how much?
You're supposed to take a water bottle cap full. And I ended up getting too much in my mouth, and I can't spit it out. So I just swallowed like 8 doses.
Oh, because you took it straight from the bottle.
Straight from a milk jug. Yeah.
He had it in a milk jug of GHB
before he distributed it. You know, he was going to fill up smaller bottles with it. So after that hit me, I was like fucking sky high. And then I just passed out, woke up
in a hospital?
In a hospital, strapped down with tubes and all kinds of shit. And I'm looking at the ceiling. All I see is ceiling light. And I'm like, where the fuck am I? And literally, like a movie, a doctor comes into frame, like on my left. And then she goes, hey, you might not, you're in the hospital right now. You overdosed on drugs. And I was like, holy shit. And then into my right side, both of my parents come in the frame.
Oh.
And I was like, and they're like, you've been in the hospital for like 12 hours. You were in a coma, but you're out of it now. And there's, you know, you're strapped down because you have tubes going in so you don't, you can resist, you know, the urge to pull tubes out. That's why your arms are strapped down. And you got liquid charcoal being pumped into your stomach because that makes like the drugs, absorbs the drugs. And then you can't digest that, so you vomit. So you vomit up any more drugs. So all my eyes are totally bloodshot. And then they give you a pen and paper, but you have to like scribble. So they're like, what did you take? Because they're still trying to figure out what I took. And I write like, heroin. And they're like, seriously? And I'm like, JK. And they're like, yeah, I swear to God. And then they're like, what is it for real?
Dick, so, seriously.
So I start writing the drugs that I took. And then my parents are there. And like, I could just see how.
Is there any part that wants to doctor the list in front of your parents? Like, just a few vodkas.
Oh, no.
Dot, 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 dot.
They come back to me later with a crazy toxicology report. But so my parents are like standing there. And
so at that point, it was GHB.
It was GHB, alcohol, and ecstasy. But they're like the fatal combination is the alcohol and
GHB.
You
smoked any herb at all?
No, I hadn't. Oh, yeah. It'll. I mean, you know, it's used. GHB is used as an anesthetic it has been used as that in Europe.
You could use GHB. It was legal. When I was in high school, it was legal. You could take it, and it would put you to – it was a sleeping sedative that burned fat while you slept.
Yes.
Yeah. That was what it was initially meant for. I never took it, but I remember people saying they could get it at GNC.
Dude, if you want to hit – this is the worst part of the,
clearly,
the OD.
Look, one look at my physique, you know I'm digging it. I'd be nodding off on this fucking couch.
I got fucked up.
I'd wake up looking like Cristiano Ronaldo. Like, yeah.
On
the Comedy Store. I used to date this girl at the Comedy Store. Stanhope introduced me to her. It was his neighbors. You know, you meet people in L.A., you don't know who the fuck you meet half the time.
Yeah.
And they drive like a little car, but their dad is somebody fucking huge. This was Mick Jagger's manager's daughter. For her 21st birthday, he bought her 2 Blockbuster videos.
Really?
And this chick was just spoiled rotten, and I hadn't seen her since she lived next to Stanhope. And I bumped into her one night. She took me back to her place. I mean, we had like a Sunday-only relationship for like a year. But she had cabinets full of drugs, from heroin to fucking, I mean, I OD'd over there one time, too. I mean, I must have eaten 30 fucking Valiums over there on a Sunday night, 8-ball fucking run we made. But she was big into GHB. She'd come to the store on Sunday nights and drink it out of a water bottle. And one night, I remember drinking, like, half the fucking thing, going back to her house.
Oh.
We were having sex, but I kept waking up, like, it was like we were fucking and sleeping. It was the weirdest thing. Like, one minute you're snoring, the next minute you're fucking. I did it like 2 or 3 times. I knew it wasn't for me.
I never did GHB.
No, I know it wasn't.
I used to do it in class. I mean, in high school, we started doing it my senior year in high school.
What was
GHB.
We would do it at lunch, and then for the second half of, you know, the afternoon of classes, you'd be high, and it's like a permagrin kind of drug. We always used to say that because you're literally the whole time, you're like
really?
No matter what happens.
Can
so,
you retain anything? Can you function at all?
You can function. Yeah, you can totally function. But it's basically in the right dosage. If you didn't take too much, it was like the perfect buzz. Like, imagine if you're drinking and you hit a perfect, like, where you feel good. Like, you actually physically feel good and you're just wanting to have fun. You know, if you could dose that correctly, it's kind of like that. But you feel it everywhere. I mean,
so,
wait, it's really...
so what was the toxicology report?
Yeah, what was the thing you were going to say? You're like, oh, here's the real...
Oh, yeah, this is... the most depressing part is, like, I'm looking, I'm strapped, I got tubes in, and they're giving me this pen, you know, I'm writing this chicken scratch, and I'm like... So my concern, looking at my parents, I write, are you mad at me? Because, you know, I'm like, and I'm looking at their face, and I'm like...
And you can't talk.
I can't talk. And they read it, and my dad goes, no, just disappointed. And I was like, couldn't you save that for later? Right now, you got to tell me right
let
now.
Let down in my son.
Super let down in you right now.
Just wondering if your mother had a longer coat hanger. Things might have been different.
Mad at me.
You really like
that. I hope my kids never overdose. I hope my kids don't get into drugs. Yeah.
No, that's. No, wow.
Yeah, let me
aim high, but that's like really that.
I just hope they don't get into drugs.
Yeah, seriously. I love the way that Hal Ramis says it in Knocked Up. No pills, no powders. If it comes out of the earth, it can't be all that bad.
I think I don't even want them to drink. So what I'm doing is I'm drinking aggressively because sometimes that turns people off. Yeah. I figure I'm being a humanitarian here.
Like, I don't want to be like that.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I hope that, like, I was playing fucking Monkey in the Middle with him the other day. And we were having so much fun. Mm-hmm. In my head, I was like, I should get a glass of wine. Like, just have a little wine, and then we could do this even longer.
Why did that happen, Brad?
And then I went, how fucking sad is that? And then I go, we're having a blast. But my brain went, we should get a glass of wine. Like, real quick, just, you know, go get a glass of wine. And I was like, I hope to God that they never have to fucking do that. Like, just, and that's not, you know, I'm not saying that. It's about weed. Like, when you're high in college, you could throw a frisbee. You're like, this would be so much better high. But fucking throwing frisbee is fun. I don't know. I'm just trying to be a great parent. All right, next subject.
So, I'll tell you about the toxicology. So a few days later, I moved to like ICU, but I'm like, you know, I have like
ICU tube.
The worst of the tubes is out. Like,
is that how they welcome you? Welcome to ICU.
Actually, cover your eyes again.
I see you.
This doctor comes in the frame. And the bears come in the frame.
Good news. I see you.
And then.
That's how you come out of the coma. It's the first thing they say.
So wait, so you get the...
The doctor's like, oh, he's like, so...
And then if the guy's a complete vegetable, they can put their eyes over, hands over his eyes and go, you're in, you see me. So wait, go back to your toxicology report.
University of California, me. You see me.
The doctor's like, oh, you said, you know, you just took these whatever, two drugs or whatever, right? And like the ecstasy, the GHB. I was like, yeah, and alcohol. He's like, well, here's your toxicology. He's like, first of all, basically, it's super good that you're fat because, a skinny person wouldn't be alive right now with what's in your.
Well, if I was skinny, I wouldn't need to take these to hang out with chicks.
I tell him, he's basically telling me, like, this is like the best, this is like the one really good argument to be 245 pound, 18-year-old like, is that you're alive now because, like, he's like, this is so much is in you. And I had basically every drug class.
Really?
Like, yeah, they're like, you got opiates, barbiturates. You're testing off the charts for cocaine, for, you know.
Oh,
dust,
they go back like a month and they tell you, like, what's in your system? You had cocaine from like previous parties.
No. This is all from that.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Because everything was spiked. No. Everything, the GH, that was the problem with GHB, is you were getting, you were never buying pure GHB. Real GHB is like made in a lab from a real chemist. And this, you were buying street version GHB that people would throw shit into. So you were never getting the real thing. That's why everybody was really super fucked up and ODing on it. It was because they were getting tons of drugs. Shit. Yeah.
I called my little sister Cottie when she was in college. I go, listen, I think I was.
Oxycontin?
What's that?
No, her name is Cottie.
No, her name's Cottie.
Oh, I thought that was like a drug thing.
I called my sister Cottie when she was in Oxycontin. Yeah, I called Oxy when she was in college, and I said to her, listen, I don't know if you're going to do ecstasy, but I'm in New York doing stand-up at the time. I'm like, I don't know if you're going to do ecstasy. I don't know what you do, but I bought this thing on the internet. It's called DanceSafe. It's to tell if you have clean ecstasy, so that because a lot of people are getting dirty shit, and I don't need to know. All I want you to know is that you have this, and you can, you know, just to be safe. And she was like, "Who does fucking ecstasy?" And I was like, I guess we did a lot when we were in college. And she was like, no one's doing ecstasy right now. I don't need it. Don't send it. I'm not doing ecstasy. And then I was like, God, I look like a fucking dirtbag. I should have asked her first. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're crazy
because
I think about I never OD'd. Jesus.
Fucking Christ.
You never OD'd? Even on heroin?
But Jesus fucking Christ. Like, you know, I only did ecstasy three times, maybe twice. You know, I was too old. When ecstasy got released, I was already in my fucking late 30s, so what did I give a fuck about it? You know, I had done so much. You know, the way I looked.
You never did ecstasy?
I probably did ecstasy two or three times. I did it once with Pablo Francisco in Miami, one time with Ricky up at the Comedy Store, and that's it. Never really. No, I didn't get it. I didn't. The way I looked at it was I already had enough problems with blow and pills. Why add ecstasy to the fucking mix? You know what I'm saying? At least you're being honest.
Just lost out.
I just, you know.
Well, I didn't see that.
Yeah, I already eat enough egg rolls and pizza.
Joey is one of those honest people you'll ever meet in your entire life. You know, the first time I met him, he was like, dog, you ever break into a chick's house on a Quaalude and eat a pussy? I'm like, no, I never. Those are the first words.
I can't believe we didn't go back to this. When you're talking about how you learn about dogs and their aggression from being a burglar.
Right.
So, did you ever break into a place and have to, like, get a dog to chill?
I had never had a problem with a dog. I was always scared of him. And there was this bookmaker, a Spanish bookmaker on Hudson, on 58th Street and Hudson Avenue in West New York, New Jersey. I knew I had to rob this guy. I went to pay him one night and he had, you know how people have cabinets for towels?
Yeah.
Like towels. This guy opened his closet and there was a cash register. Like all the shelves were like 50s, 20s, and 100s. This is where he conducted his business for sports betting.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this motherfucker's going down. And I just gave him a few weeks. I kept betting with him. And me and my buddy Stinky were going to rob this guy. And there was a German Shepherd behind the fucking his place. Now, guys, I got no reason to lie to you. I was broke. This is 1983. I'm living in a basement with my buddy. And we're robbing shit and selling it and hanging out at the bar. There was no jobs then. Nobody worked then.
Yeah.
And we case joints in the daytime. So I would case this joint. I'd wake up. I'd have like $6. I'd buy a Whopper Jr., give it to the dog. I wouldn't even eat. I would fucking buy food for the dog for this whole week just to case the joint. Then I'd jump the fence, play with the dog a little while, get closer. I'd rip up the Whopper Jr. and his fucking food bowl. I had a Goombas.
You're greasing the dog.
I'm greasing the dog. I'm there for a fucking week and a half feeding this dog, bringing him milkshakes, the whole fucking thing, right?
Bringing him milkshakes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I was 18 at the time. The way I figured out was how to get to a man's heart is through his fucking stomach.
Dog's driving around the Carl's Jr.
I kept bringing this dog food. So came to Saturday night, we're going to rob this fucking guy. I go back there. I'm just about to bust in the fucking window, and the cops pull up. I hear when they broke, the thing went whoop. Like
yeah.
A little light. The cop fucked up. And the lookout, Stinky, he was getting food, the fat fuck that he was. There was a Cuban joint. He went in there to get food. And I'm like, where the fuck is Stinky? And sure enough, I see the cops walking with the flashlights. So I had to jump over a fence, and that's where the German Shepherd was. I go, I got this. Once the cops walk past me, I'll just jump over. I got the Shepherd. By the time they know what hit him, the Shepherd will bite them.
Yeah.
I jumped the fence. It's nighttime. The motherfucker don't remember me. He starts chasing me like I owe him $20 to the fucking end. To the end. And there's an A&P next to the guy's house. I'm cornered now. Cops jumped the fence. They're chasing me. I got the cops and the dog chasing me. I felt so hurt from the dog. You know what I'm saying? Like I felt so fucking betrayed. Not even that we didn't even get to rob the guy's house. Till this day, I had gloves on. And I got my hands caught. A barbed wire. I still got the fucking scar. None of that pissed me off.
It was the
as much as that fucking dog, the loyalty turned. Like all week, I gave him my last fucking burger. You understand? If you give a fucking a guy that's dying your last burger, he'll give you something, a toenail. This dog showed me nothing, the motherfucker that he was. I thought about going back there and killing this motherfucker. If I didn't. You know, but Cubans, they honor their dogs and shit. He was a shepherd. I couldn't kill him out of respect. But till this day, I'm fucking pissed at that dog. But now he's dead anyway. Fuck him.
He's a shepherd. Any other breed, you're fucking dead to me.
No, I fucking killed him. But he was a shepherd. He was a good dog. He was doing his job, you know?
Fucking shelter, you're dead.
And I could never kill a dog or something.
I couldn't.
Then another time, I robbed his house, and the people had a cat. I didn't get attacked by the cat. My buddy got attacked by the cat. And to me, that was one of the funniest things because you never prepare for that.
Yeah.
You prepare for cops. You prepare for black people. You prepare for leopards. You never prepare for a fucking cat.
Yeah.
She would weigh the blow in a room. We thought it's because she didn't want us to see us weighing the blow. No. She had the cat back there. So we went to rob her. My buddy's like, where do I go? I go, when you go in there, go to the room. That's where she's got the blow. I was downstairs because she lived on the second floor. And we could hear the cat attacking my friend. Till this day, when I talk to that same guy, he always goes to me, you know, motherfucker, I still got the cat claws in my head from that fucking day. Because the cat jumped on his head and started pulling up on his scalp. You
can't fight a cat.
This. You can't write this shit. He kept coming to the balcony going, I'm jumping. And we're like, don't jump. We'll fucking kill you, cocksucker. Get back in there. And he's trying to pull the cat off his fucking head. And the cat's like, one claw would pop out, but then the other one would go even deeper. You know what happened when you
yeah.
pull your cat off the front?
Yeah, fucking.
One always goes, but the one stays in there. It ripped him fucking apart. He still has little things in his fucking.
That's when you headbutt a wall.
Oh, if you have a cat on your head, you have to headbutt a wall.
I don't know. I really don't. I don't know. When I was walking up to your house, I was very apprehensive. I saw a little orange cat. And then I see
Gus,
little Gus. Daughter. Behind you.
Do not open these doors.
I will not. I will not. But I saw you have two awesome dogs, and my family dog just passed away. So anytime I get a chance to like play with a dog, that's why I came in with the pooch last time.
Yeah.
Like,
what did so you meet Priscilla? Awesome.
Yeah, the big one. I just saw her, but she was locked up.
She
what
was
kind of dog is that?
Bull Mastiff.
That's beautiful.
She's fucking.
I heard she's a puppy. Yeah.
Yeah. She's a
fucking arm.
Oh yeah, she's scared. She'll scare that. She scares a lot of fucking people. Like
that's
I didn't
a
realize.
Big dog,
that's a
man.
Big fucking dog.
Yeah, we had the exterminator come here yesterday.
Yeah,
and Priscilla tried to like sneak her head out the door, but her head's so big. The second you can't like you got to like fight it back, and he got terrified. He goes, "Hey man, can you put your dog up?" I was like, "Oh, she's up," and he's like, "No, lock the back doors. Like if I'm gonna be around this house, that needs to be up."
You know, the other thing is those paws, man. Those are like bear paws.
Yeah.
She gets enormous. She gets right up in your face.
One of my my godfathers has a Great Dane, big Great Dane called Latka. Latka just passed, but Latka was like Marmaduke. And you know, when Latka would stand up, Latka was taller than a man. So she'll take you down to Chinatown. And I heard that your dog will knock people over.
Oh yeah, she'll knock dudes over. And it's so funny to see like she's real, especially all my comic friends. She's real, like timid around, and like she'll stare. Like her and Duncan, we did a podcast in here, Duncan's podcast, and Duncan comes in with the beard and the hat and his glasses, and he's like, "Hey, man!" And Pris is like, "I don't like this energy," and just starts following him, just like ghosting him. And Duncan's walking quicker and quicker. He gets in here. She stood at this door and stared at him for the entire podcast. Just stared at Duncan. I was like, Pris, he's a good guy. Look, yeah. So, yeah. Wait, where do you live? Where do you live?
Brooklyn, New York.
In Brooklyn. You grew up in Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Really?
Uh huh.
What's up, Moby?
And where do you live now?
Brooklyn, New York.
Still.
Root to the fruit.
No shit.
Same, like Biggie says, same number, same hood. It's all good. Seriously, I moved up. The place that I wanted fucking man caves to do for me, I lived in a one bedroom basement apartment, and my window was about the size of that shelf right there. It was actually a little bit smaller. And all I had a view over the bottom of the garbage cans and people's feet. So, like, I used a glass brick and, like, mirror trying to, like, transmit what little sunlight I had through my house. And I lived in this little apartment. And so when I got my show, I literally just moved up a floor like George and Wheezy. And now I have both. And Man Caves, apparently they sent their scout. He was like, oh, I don't know, space is too tight. I'm like, it's a whole apartment, Jack. Like, you kidding me?
New York's people, I think people's perspective is different, especially like come out here to LA and they're like my friends that are like living like Colorado or whatever, and they're like, oh, this is great. But you can totally tell in their house, they're like, your whole family lives in here?
I met Jason.
Cameron.
Yeah. I met him for the DirecTV stuff that we all did in New Orleans for the Super Bowl. And he told me about building your man cave. Was it a good experience?
Yeah, it was fucking great. It was the greatest thing. I think that yours didn't happen, and I think I got the money for both of them. Because this fucking, they did not have this planned at all. And then they just were like, kept adding and adding and adding.
They offered to like build these sets via like satellite and then like send me the pieces. And I was like, what? Like you'll build me a bar and send me a bar? That doesn't mean no good. It's a full apartment, then they could do something. And I called them out in front of like the DirecTV folks in New Orleans.
Jason's cool though. You get along.
He's awesome.
Yeah, Jason's great. So is Goose. Do you know Goose?
I don't know Goose. Goose and I have corresponded, and I've actually in Toms River, New Jersey. There's a Holiday Inn that we stayed at.
Dimitri
Martin's
home.
Is it?
Yeah, Dimitri Martin's from Toms River.
We shot at the Holiday. We stayed at the Holiday Inn while we shot the Jersey Shore episode. And he has a restaurant he invested in next door. It's got a big Siragusa jersey over the thing. But, I mean, not for nothing. It's a whole apartment. It's got running water and gas and a full stove. Like, the notion of doing a bar and grill, that's what I want. I want, like, sort of a bar and grill's kind of screening room thing. And I want three particular beers on tap.
Which beers, can you say?
I want Guinness.
Yeah,
I want Bear Republic Racer 5 IPA out of Healdsburg, California.
Don't know that one.
And I thought about the third. I thought about I need to go like an ale, like, and I was thinking like Bass. But then my friend last night made a really good point. It might be cool to be able to have like ice cold Asahi or Sapporo at any time.
Ooh, I can always go
right?
Asahi.
Because nice. They're just the crisp. Yeah. They'll go with a steak. They'll go with a pizza. They'll go with fucking cannabis pretzels.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just think that, like, you know, you could always do something like Bud, but I think, like, if you have frosted mugs and you have these guys building you bar systems, and I see you've got a draft system.
Yeah.
Do you have a keg in there?
No, just beers. The keg, oddly enough, kegerators are great for parties. They're horrible for everyday use. Because you put a keg in there.
They go flat.
Blue Moon. And no, it doesn't last forever. And so, like, and I'm on the road so much, I come back and then And then your lines go bad. You got to keep the lines active. So it's kind of a pain in the ass, but it's great for parties. You have a party and you put a keg in, and it's like you don't have to worry about beers or trash or.
Can you just. Are there services that you could like come in, have them clean?
Yeah, yeah. You have to get a guy to come in and clean the lines for you. But it's cool. This fucking man cave is the greatest thing that ever happened to me. And when they did the reveal, I came in and Goose, you know, it's typical fucking television. They're ready, and they're like, all right, we're ready for them. Go get them. So then the two hosts, this is how we do it on Triplet. Two hosts, Jason and Goose, come over to me and Leanne. Like, we're at the front of the drive-in. They're like, all right, we're ready. And then they walk up, and they hold there, and Goose looks at me, and he goes, don't fucking cry. I go, what? And he goes, I know you. I know you're going to cry when you see this. Don't fucking cry. And I was like, I won't. And I was like, what? How good can it be? Mind you, this was a teardown. And we walked around and we see the doors and we see the pavers. We see the fucking cat. We see everything. And I'm like, before we even got out here, just looking at the outside work, this house was a fucking mess when we bought it. They fucking did the whole backyard. There's a shower right there. There's fucking, they put pavers all around. And then I see these doors and I know we wanted to do that in our house, but we couldn't afford them. And I saw these doors and I was like, fuck. And then they had this all draped off, and I opened the door, and I saw it, and I fucking literally started welling up, and Goose is right next to me going, don't fucking cry.
It's awesome, man. It's really awesome what they did.
It was great.
Yeah, they did amazing work.
No, wait. What's your new show, Adam?
The new show...
Because we are Travel Channel employees.
We are Travel Channel employees.
And we conduct ourselves really as cool. Such at all times. I will note.
You know, it's really cool because if you think about it, you know, I mean, just 2 years before you, maybe. I think two years, maybe three tops. I was the new Jet. And you came in, and I had seen this spec for your show. And I teased Danny, and I was like...
Dan Adler,
I auditioned for Man vs. Food for Dan Adler. Actually, at Katz's Deli, my final screen test. Truth. And I love this guy. And to know him is to love him. And... I saw the spec thing on his desk, and I was like, kind of like all butthurt. And I was like, what is this, Man versus Ride? Like, it's structured the same way.
It was really close.
And so Dan's like, not that. And he's like, look, your show works as a personality. You got to see this guy. And I saw the trailer, and it's Bert going up in this roller coaster.
Tropical Dragster.
You actually see him almost weep and mouthing, oh, fuck. And
then it got stuck up there.
Uh-huh.
It got stuck. They shoot you off at 124 miles an hour, up like 410 feet. I already remember. I still remember my read. And then you get to the top, and you're supposed to crest over it and come back. The ride takes 13 seconds. It's a whole ride. So we shoot off, and we go up, and we get up to the top, and it hits the top, and it sticks, and it stops. Fucking the perfect shot, and I start losing my mind, and I start going like fucking full blown. I start yelling "fuck you" to the crew because I figured they did this on purpose because they want a great fucking pilot.
Yeah.
And then I start "fuck no," and I start having like convulsing in my chair, and I give it enough momentum to roll backwards, and it goes back to the front, and we got to do it fucking again. And we got stuck on that ride four times because they couldn't get the weight right because we were shooting and we had cameras, so they couldn't get four. Fucking times I rolled back on that fucking ride.
You really do panic.
Oh,
and I gotta say, man, not for nothing. You know, I was like, I enjoy this guy, and I enjoy this guy because as a host, there's something you get. I think Andrew gets it. I think Tony gets it. The crux of being a good host is being a good guest. Am I right? If you're a good guest, you invite the audience in with you. If you're a host and you sort of impose a personality, then you're a bull in a china shop.
Yeah, I never really looked at it that way. But now that you say that, when you go to someone's restaurant, you're a guest. And if you're a good guest, whatever you're doing, like for me, if it's going to a theme park or going to someone's backyard swing, if you're a good guest and people like you at the place, then it translates and you're a good host.
Think about if you're watching it through that window, like that as a window, not that as a TV. And it's like you'd much rather watch a guy being like great because the more he learns and is gracious and appreciative, the more we can learn and be gracious and appreciative. Like, you know, the shot that really got me with you, I don't know what episode it was. You were on a trolley with some little kid.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that it was because it was something like kind of narcissistically. I probably am like, I would have done the same joke. But like he's like. He's talking to this little kid. He's like, you look back on this day, and you'll see Bean. You'll be like, I partied with that guy. He was a cool guy. And it's like, kid's like 6 years old. And Bert's like, you'll be looking at me. You'll be like, I partied with that guy. That guy and I had a good time.
That kid did not get it. It was like
he didn't get it.
Like, he just looked at me. Like,
and he just stayed there. Bert didn't give up the joke. And it was so great. It was just so, because he wasn't disrespecting the kid at all.
Who does a bad job of what you're talking about, like, as a host?
There are people, but
not on Travel Channel, but let's go through and rat out some bad hosts.
I don't know. No. I know that this
come on, I'll get in. Let's go around the room.
I won't.
Tom, you used to tell a bad host that you think.
A bad host that I think.
And I'll tell you if that's an accurate or if I haven't seen them or if I think they're.
I have to think of, I mean, host. I can think of, what's it called?
Louis Anderson on Family Feud was kind of special.
Yeah, that was not good.
Yeah, he was all over the map. And Louis is a friend of mine, but he was not the best Family Feud host.
Magic Johnson was a notable
Magic
bad host,
Johnson
right?
was a horrible host.
Yeah, he was a horrible host. But that was more because, well, he was trying to sort of impose a personality, like you're saying. But
well,
he was
Magic
also,
Johnson had a talk show, though, right?
That's what we're saying.
Yeah, that's
though.
What we're saying. He was a horrible host.
And admits to it. It's not like we're saying something that nobody would, you know, somebody would disagree with. But he also didn't know how to engage conversation. Like, it wasn't so much personality didn't like, you're like, he doesn't know what he's doing.
Well, there's a moment of, like, especially hosting live television or live talk shows where your brain's kind of scrambling to fit whatever you're trying to say into a sound bite so that you can get the other guy to reply in a 4-minute interview.
Did you ever see his interviews? What he would do in an interview?
No.
Like, what he did 100 times is basically, like, if you came out, he'd be like, we got Adam Richman, Man versus Food. Give it out, and everybody would clap. You come out and be like, hey, man. You're like, hey, man. He'd be like, man, like, you really, that's a good show you got, man.
Thank you, Magic. Thank you, Magic.
Yeah,
I like watch your show too, man. I like you too, Magic.
I watch you do your show, and it's like, it's a lot of food, man.
Yeah, no, it is. It is a lot of food. It is, but it's fun.
Man, sometimes I'm like, nah, I wouldn't eat that.
Yeah, no, sometimes I watch it too. And sometimes, like, I'll talk about it with my producers and I'll go, You know, I don't know. That's pretty intense. But, you know, at the end of the day, it does make for great TV. And it's fun to show these local places. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because there's a lot of food, man.
Sure is, Magic. That's a lot of food.
Sometimes when you know it.
What's that?
When you eat it, sometimes they're like, man, he's going to be sick after that.
You know, a lot of people think that. A lot of people, when they see Man vs. Food Magic, they think that, like, oh, you must puke after every show. But, like, I'd have no teeth to talk to you right now if I did.
He on the dookie shoot all night on that one.
No, not really.
Wait, are you the side guest?
Yeah, he knows. Yeah, it is a lot of food, but like not as much dookie shoot time as you might think. A lot less.
Man, I will be right back.
That was phenomenal. Oh, man, the only way that could have been better is if I came to Bert's house in a DeLorean. Like, I came all the way back to the Magic Show. You know, what about the Arsenio Hall phenomenon? Because the thing is, like,
That's coming back.
Remember on Entertainment Weekly, there was that famous quote of him saying, I'm going to kick Leno's ass. Because he had come to prominence right when Johnny turned the reins over to Jay. And there was a quote, there was a picture of Arsenio like this, popping his collar in a black leather jacket. And it says, I'm going to kick Leno's ass. It was a direct quote.
Wait, what happened to him? Why did he get off the air? He had a success.
Exactly, but that was
a huge controversy, right? When the show left?
Well, it wasn't the whole thing. I mean, I think that if I'm not mistaken, I mean, it wasn't just a matter of controversy. It was hugely popular. And then I think that it just couldn't sustain itself. I don't think people wanted to bark anymore. I don't think.
Oh, I remember
but
that.
He was. Yeah. But I watched it religiously. Channel 9, yeah. WOR, yeah. Back in New York. That was my at a Secaucus, New Jersey. That was it. Arsenio Hall at 9. There's a rhyme in Tribe Called Quest, Low End Theory. The song called What? Mm-hmm. What's Channel 9 if it doesn't have Arsenio?
Yeah.
Like, it was really interesting because, yeah, he was tremendous. But then Dennis Miller got his show. I remember it was Letterman, Dennis Miller. Leno had just taken over the Tonight Show. And then Arsenio Hall. And who was his band leader? Didn't he have a certain
I think it was a young DMX.
Sheila E. was his band leader?
No, it was DMX. That's DMX. How he got to start. You didn't know that, John?
No.
No, John doesn't listen to much hip hop. Yeah. DMX was he's a trumpet player originally by trade. No, John.
The D stands for Dizzy. He was a trumpet
player right now.
Man, DMX is one of the most fucking fascinating human beings in the world.
I've heard many, many stories about...
y'all can't see me?
About, yeah, like, Kim. Yeah.
Boomer!
That's his dog. That's what he loves.
Yeah.
Boomer.
I had a great joke.
You ready?
I had a great joke right when I first started doing stand-up because I was obsessed with DMX, and I kept saying, it sounds like he has Tourette's syndrome.
Hey.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, man, what are we going to do? We're going to go to Wendy's. What? And the guy, and I would do this joke about him having DMX or having Tourette's, and some black comic was like, man, I like that joke. And I was like, oh, thanks. Next time, the guy's doing the exact joke verbatim.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but he was much bigger than me, and he had been to prison. So I was like, okay.
That's your joke,
it's all
man.
Yours, buddy.
The best DMX story is when he got arrested. I think he got arrested at JFK. You know about that?
By impersonating a police officer?
A federal officer.
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm a federal officer. They're like, no, you're DMX, man. Like, we know who you are.
Oh, did you ever hear him? Did you ever hear him be interviewed about why he did that?
No.
Oh, he's on like the morning show, the Breakfast Club, and 106 and Park, or one, you know, in New York, whatever it is. It's all black, and they're like, "So DMX, I heard that you got your driver's license suspended," and he's like, "No," and they're like, "What?" He goes, "I drove here today," and then his friends are like, "Well, hold on," and he's like, "You're not allowed to drive." He's like, "Yeah, they took it away, but it's not suspended." and then they're like, "But you're a pretty bad driver." He goes, "No, I'm a great driver. If that dude just would pull over, I needed to show him some respect." And then like you impersonated an officer, and he's like, "Yeah, I had to. The guy wouldn't pull over. I needed to pull him over, so I had to pretend to be a federal officer." Like, it was like, it was all very rational in his head. Like, this all makes sense. Have you ever heard him rhyme Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, fucking right. Rogan introduced me to that. Yeah. Greatest fucking...
What?
It's amazing. Oh.
It's amazing. DMX singing Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. I'm going to fucking get it, and you're going to listen to it. You're going to be like, shut the fuck up.
Got a very tiny nose. But.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good, man.
Get at him. Get at him. Ride or die, Santa.
You know what? You know what you were saying about the host thing that I do think where it really stands out more to me than on, because TV, you know, I think has a better percentage of good hosts than radio. In radio, you run into it a lot where you'll meet hosts that are all about themselves. So they'll be like, fucking Joey Diaz is here today. And then all you hear is the host. The host is like, bah, blah, blah, blah. Like he asks one question and then he takes it. And then he's like, thanks for coming in. And you're like, oh, this is just like your own showcase for yourself. Like they don't interview the guests, you know?
I will say this. I did the Tonight Show with Leno and then I did it with Conan. And both really great experiences, but I found Leno was very much about his guests.
Uh-huh.
Conan was incredibly funny, but he would use you to set up his wit.
Right.
You know, I felt like he kind of like mocked me a little bit. I mean, a lot of people who watched it think, you know, and I get it, and it's cool. But he was really funny, but Leno said, I felt was about setting you up to be funny, and I felt that that was kind of his charm.
Mm-hmm.
And I also said Leno like came around to every dressing room, signed all the cards himself,
really?
Went over each segment himself. Like Conan's producers had worked with me, and again, nice to a person, big pre-interview, but like Leno, man, I have to say was just like as a host for me, I felt. Because it's nerve-wracking, and Leno just kind of brings you out.
I have a very similar experience at Good Day Dallas when I go down there.
Bullshit. You and Rachel Ray are like besties. You are the Michael Strahan to her Kelly Ripa.
I would love to do a fucking show with her.
Do a morning show?
We're doing the Tough Mudder, and then we're doing...
for her show?
And then we're doing the Empire State run. We're running to the top of the Empire State. And
how
then we're
do
going
you guys not
sharks.
Do a morning show?
Yeah, you're looking like in terrific shape,
it's,
I gotta
oh, thank
say.
You, thank you. It's that cleanse I did. Fucking cleanse was great.
Here's God, too.
This is DMX. This is...
I know the lyrics.
Would you do us the honors of spitting Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer?
You know Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen, but do you recall the most famous reindeer of all? Come on! Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose. And if you
fucking DMX. Fucking love DMX. I need more of him. I wish I had visited him when he was in prison. Like, don't you like?
Did you have an option?
No, but I could have. Like, if he was just
it's
like, I'll put $100. I'll put $100. What do they call it, Joey, in prison when you put money in someone's? Yeah, I'll put $100 on his books. I just want to hang out with him for a little bit, and then him just come out and be like, "What's up?" And be like,
"Put some money in
hey,
his
Earl.
Account."
Yeah, I got some. I put $100 in for cigarettes, hey, and Earl. I got you an asthma inhaler. And he'd be like, so what do you want to know?
Yeah, I didn't sleep all night. Brothers was talking loud, crazy loud.
Joey spent some time in prison and
loud all fucking night.
He said, brothers talk
doing
all
time
night.
Like a motherfucker.
The brothers talk. So wait, yeah, let's just do an improv real quick. Adam, you can improv this. We're going to all pretend we're in prison in different cells, okay?
Okay.
And then we're going to be ourselves or are we going to be... you can pick what nationality you want to be.
Joey's definitely a
all I wanted to do was
eye.
Make a joke about DMX singing dreidel, dreidel, dreidel. All right, go ahead. I'm in my own cell.
Wait, okay, so... Cause,
Joey's a black guy.
Okay, Joey, you're going to be black.
You're in prison.
Yo, what up?
And then I'll be Bert.
Okay.
I got in for, like, tax evasion.
And I'm another black guy that knows Joey.
Okay, and then Adam, you're going to be... You're going to be – you be you. We're going to be Bert and Adam, and you guys just be two black guys in prison, okay?
Oh
okay?
God. All right.
Okay. So we're all – it's like
– and it's late.
All right, gentlemen. Lights out. Kush.
Yo, Buns.
Yo, what up, Coco?
Yo, Buns.
Yo, Coco. Yo, it's Buns.
Yo, Buns.
Adam.
Yo, Buns.
Yo, it's Buns.
You sleeping?
Nah, man.
Adam Richmond.
Fuck Adam, all right? Adam ain't here, bitch.
No, I'm looking for
Adam. Buns, what's up?
Shut the fuck up, white boy.
Hey, yo, Bert.
Buns, who's Bert?
No, it's me and Adam. We're speaking to each other.
Shut the fuck up, motherfucker.
Adam.
Buzz, what are we doing tomorrow?
Bert, let him talk. I'll talk to you in the morning.
Buzz, we let the sun shine tonight. We let the sun shine all day.
Buzz, what'd she say?
Bert, please don't talk.
You know how it is.
I have a really important question.
Don't be coming through trying to take that shit from me, man.
Oh, Bert, they're so black. Buzz. They're so black.
Yo, Buzz.
Buzz, what's up, Coco?
What's your question?
Hey, that first season of Man
Yo, man,
Food,
shut the fuck up. We're having a conversation here, motherfucker.
I'm talking to my friend Adam.
Buzz, these white motherfuckers are
so
rude as shit.
Tomorrow,
so good.
Oh, yeah? Well, my name's Adam Richmond, and you can take my dick.
No.
Rude motherfuckers.
Bert Kreischer, Bert.
Yo, Bert.
Cut Bert and Adam's dicks off, and fuck your mama with a white boy.
All right, end scene.
I'm so traumatized.
That was the first sketch we've ever done on my podcast.
I'm so traumatized.
That's going to definitely win a Webby.
I am so traumatized right now.
Have you ever
I felt
been to jail?
Like I was in Oz.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, we're getting a lot of fucking
Yeah, Joey. Joey was telling us that, like, that's one of the worst parts in prison is that you never sleep because people just have full volume, yelling from floor to floor conversation all night, every night. So you're never really resting.
Be fucking exhausting. There's so many things. Like, I got my, when I left Florida State, they didn't graduate me. I had to take correspondence classes back then. In like 97, it was before the internet was as popular as it is now.
Is this after your fourth year?
After my seventh
year.
And I go to college? I go and they I cool. sign up and they're like, these are the Florida State prison classes. Same prison system, college degree, it's the same one. So I was taking classes like I was in prison, but I was living in New York starting stand up and they send you a box of books with all the questions. Like the tests are already in there and like a little blue thing and they're like write a paper. Answer these questions, and their books like on fucking. And I was like, it was the hardest I've ever worked in school in my entire life. And I thought, I would never get an education if I was in prison. I would never be able to do this work. And I'm thinking about getting raped in the prison, in the shower. Like that on your head, how the fuck could you do schoolwork? Anyone who gets an education in college, in prison, I'm fucking shocked.
Yeah, no, I know. And the guys get like multiple degrees.
Like, prison's so fucking hard.
But you know what? They're always guys that are like, we're doing life. I got locked up at 19. I'm 48. Like, they've been there so long that they're like, after all these years, I'm...
Fuck, I got raped. I might as well get my degree.
Yeah.
You know? After the fear, a while, they just go, fuck it.
Yeah. The initial fear is
What's the best part about prison?
There ain't no fucking good part to any of that shit.
Like, there's not one part that you, as you're leaving, you're like, I'm going to miss that.
It's your freedom.
Yeah. What?
Somebody asked me.
Freedom to do anything pretty much in the
courts.
World.
They have great basketball courts sometimes.
Yeah, like some good pickup games.
Oh, my God.
The competition was really good.
I don't have any respect for fucking anything. But I'll tell you what petrifies the shit out of me is drinking and driving.
Oh,
and
fuck
I'll tell you why. Because they take away your license. You don't know what life is when you have a car and then they take it away from you. Could you imagine if you had to walk to fucking Ventura to catch a bus every day? And that's what the part of drinking that scares the shit out of me.
That's why you don't drink?
That's why I don't drink. Because I don't understand in my head how somebody could take a chance and lose their license. That the worst thing about prison isn't prison or going getting raped and all that shit. I was in there for like 2 years. Nothing happens. The worst thing is a man kicking your couch and telling you you have to wake up. That's something that didn't fly with me.
Just that dude hitting the stick
That's
on your
it.
Own. Like, everybody
be
awake.
The man says, Bert, honey, we got to take the girls to school. No. A light comes on and somebody kicks you in the fucking bed. That's what messes with you. It's your manhood.
Yeah.
It's not the bar. Hey, listen, that's a fucking piece of cake. Somebody brings you food on the weekends and you hang out and talk to black people. You know how fucking entertaining that is? Listen to black people talk all night. You know, and just look different things. You learn different things.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot scarier. It's like when you're watching TV and they talk about the streets of Brooklyn. You're like, what street? I got Jews down the corner and I got more blacks up the corner than the Puerto Ricans. What street are you people talking about on CBS News?
Yeah.
What street do they talk about? Bert grew up on the bad streets of Florida. What streets are these people talking about?
In my case, it's definitely Myrtle Avenue in Fort Greene, and I would also say
what street?
Street.
It is also probably Bedford as far down as the Bed-Stuy stop.
Right, Bed-Stuy. You know, you have your... But it's really weird what society...
Myrtle Avenue is fucking terrible. They call it Murder Avenue.
Really?
Yeah, it's walking distance.
Nice.
From your place?
And the Barclays Center. So you can see the Rolling Stones get a Starbucks and shot. Yay, Brooklyn.
I grew up on Colebrook Court. Wasn't that hard.
Yeah, it was.
Grew up.
When I first came from Cuba, we lived on 205 West 88th Street.
And I moved to. I love that neighborhood.
Oh, that's my favorite neighborhood in the world.
I lived at 104 and West End. And my favorite restaurant in Manhattan, which closed, was a... See, I love Chino Latino food and Upper West Side.
On 74th.
79th or 79th?
You think you're talking
wait, but there's also...
Motherfuckers don't know about
but
Cuban.
But there's Perez Caridad.
Cuban
there's,
Chinese food?
Yeah, there's Perez Caridad. And then there's Flor de Mayo. But the one that I love was called La Rosita. And it was on Broadway between 108 and 109. Right by the... When they built the Titanic Memorial. It's Duke Ellington Way. And it's Broadway, and on the west side of it, La Rosita, and it was a mix. And I got the same thing every time, tortilla con plátano maduro. So you get a plátano maduro omelet. You get their black bean soup with raw white onion. You get a negro modelo, and then they had homemade flan. And the whole thing maybe cost you like $8.50.
Jeez.
It was ridiculous. God, it was like, and garlic bread, homemade garlic bread. That was just wonderful. And they would use this Puerto Rican bread called pan sabao. It's similar to Cuban bread. Not real Cuban bread. It has the palm leaf on it. There's a place in Tampa, Aguila's.
Yeah.
Aguila. I think they're Medianoche. I think they use great bread. Great bread on that one.
Good. What's the best? Okay, we've all watched Man vs. Food. What's the one dish?
But have you watched Best Sandwich in America? By the way, there is a new show.
Yeah, of course I have.
There is a new show, though. There is a new show.
Yeah, you're doing the new show.
About fans.
Can you talk about it?
Yeah, but no, ask me the food question.
Okay, let's talk about food, because I'm fucking...
I have a couple questions.
I took the job at Travel Channel, the reason I took the meeting with Adler is because they produced Man vs. Food, and I was obsessed with the show. It was one of the... It was one of those shows that I could not turn off. And if it was on, even if I had seen it, I'd watch it again. Fucking greatest show.
Thank you, man.
And I started using it. I think I've told you this before, I'm sure, but I started using it to travel. So, like, when I go to the road, like, I go to Columbus, and I'd be like, well, fuck, I got to go to that fucking burger joint.
Thurman's.
I got to get the Therminator. So me and Bob Biggerstaff went to Thurman's with Dave Stroop, and we waited outside for fucking 4 hours. We waited 4 hours.
No.
4 hours. And all anyone was talking about was Man vs. Food. And it was packed. Swamped. You had to like, it was so hard to get a table. We ended up going to another place you went to in Columbus.
Schmidt Sausage House?
Yep. And we had fucking...
That's the one I always hit. The Thurman's I can't really go to because it gets a little cray-cray. You know, but Schmidt's, man, if you're into like the grilled sausages, they make a spicy one called the Bahama Mama. And it's out of this world.
Where's that? What is it? Where is it?
German Village in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, yeah. Columbus. Okay.
One second. We got to talk about this thing. So where's the only spot now in New York to get that Chinese Cuban type stuff? They still got the one in Broadway.
Ooh. Yeah, this Perez Caridad.
Right.
Which is 79.
Every Winkler told me.
79, 70.
There a lot.
Really?
70, yeah, maybe 75, 74.
Right.
For the rice and beans, I go to Flor de Mayo. On, I think it's like Broadway in 96. But I usually just go to Comidas China Latino. Oh, there's also one on 14th Street on the north side of 14th between 6th and 7th or 7th and 8th. But it's on the north side and it also says Comidas China Latino. It's great. It's like John
I just understood what you're saying. Food of the Chinese and Latin people.
Yeah, well, it's a synthesis.
You speak Spanish, Tom.
Yeah.
What's he saying?
I
exactly what you said.
A lot of people don't know that. Is that what it is? Up to 1960, maybe, the biggest Chinatown was in Cuba. And Fidel still respects it. He don't fuck with it. Now, there's Cubans, there's Chinese people that you look at, their faces, and they speak Cuban. Not Spanish. They speak, oye, dame el plátano, dame el cafecito, humano, me la carne humana. You're like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
And I grew up with one that was really popular in Jersey. It was called La Campana China. It was on 57th Hidden. It's been long gone. And what they served you was pork fried rice, fucking off the chain, with a pork chop, with an egg roll, with black beans on the side. And you just say, what the fuck you explain it to people, they're like, Joey, are you fucking why? And I was doing Children's Hospital. That show, Children's Hospital. And Henry Winkler was talking about that neighbor. That's where he lives. And the chick was like, I eat there all the time. And I'm like, this is great that two white motherfuckers know about this.
Yeah.
Well, the one on 14th Street.
You don't know what I'm talking about.
The one on 14th Street's worth checking out. It's pretty great. Actually, that's down the street from Comics. They do the hack chicken thigh, fried chicken thigh. But they do it like Chinese style fried chicken fry with like the fried rice, black beans. You can get tostones. But I love that stuff. Upper West Side, that one area, the Upper West. Have you been to V&T's Pizza?
No. I'm bad at fucking food.
Yo, V&T's Pizza?
V&T's is right across from St. John the Divine. And Zagat's accurately said that a freshman in Columbia will sooner forget what they learned in English 101 than their first V&T's Pizza. They use full milk mozzarella. And it is the New York Italian restaurant personified. Super dimly lit, like cataract dimly lit. Red and white tablecloths, Chianti bottles on the table. But angel hair with pesto that's like out of this world. Like out of this world. Like I don't want to fucking share it with you at all. Like you taste the pine nuts, you taste the basil, you taste all the elements. But their pizza it's so milky, you know what I mean? It's may not be my favorite, but it's one of the absolute best experiences in New York for like get a big Valpolicella, like a big red wine and the red and white tablecloth, yeah. And they're playing Enrico Caruso records and shit. That's what fucking Patsy's used to be. Patsy's Under the Bridge in Brooklyn used to be that. It's not that anymore. Now it's just like a lot of yuppies going there.
That's what I love about Cuban food in Miami. Like I went and had Cuban food with Emilio Estefan, and he was like, I want picadillo. That was my favorite dish always. And he goes, well, if you want to have a real Cuban, you need an egg on it. And I was like, really? And now all I can think about, I ended up getting something else, but all I can think about is picadillo with an egg on
it. What is picadillo?
It's like a ground beef and like all ground up and with spices and like olives and
that from the coast with to up.
Like if you look at the Cuban map, it changes in each province. The province where my family's from, they put potatoes in it, raisins.
Raisins, right,
throw
yeah.
Throw it off, and olives over white rice.
That's because the Sicilians and the Moors settled there. That's why Sicilian cooking and the Moorish Spanish influence brought raisins. That's why you start seeing rice. You never saw rice in Italian cooking before. And that was introduced by all the African elements and the Mooran Spanish elements that came through. So cooking with raisins, and that even went down to Nicaragua. In Nicaragua, they make tamales. They're called maca tamales, which have olives in them as well. And it's this interesting kind of lineage. And you watch like olive vines and stuff being planted.
Tom, you had a sandwich blog on your website, didn't you?
Oh, my God, like 4 years ago.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that only because that was when Man vs. Food started. And you hadn't you kept up a food blog?
I keep a book. I'm a douche with my website. I haven't done shit with it. I have to do more.
I got to say something. I got to get out of here.
All right, you rolling out?
I watched the show a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
I even asked Bird about you. I think we had a conversation about him.
Yeah.
About the show. And you blew my mind. You're the real fucking deal, which you don't see in this.
Thanks,
society
man.
Anymore.
Thank you, man.
You don't see this at all in the society anymore. Everybody's fucking, faking the funk. They're cool to be faking the funk. I don't get it. If you're gonna go on TV and talk to people about food, I was 415 pounds. I'm 308 now.
Mazel tov,
I would
man.
Give my life to be 500 again, just to eat what the fuck I want, to smoke dope and eat. You know what I'm saying? That's what brings me life. Some people want to fucking suck. Some people want to travel. Fuck you. I just from coast to coast, and I'm very happy because everybody wants to be cool and go to England and shit like that. I'm from Cuba. I wanted to see what America had to offer from coast to coast food wise. I love what you guys do. Just going to Houston and eat 1 week and let these motherfuckers know Houston's got some great food too. Frisco, but it's amazing how anywhere you go now in this country, it's good fucking food. It's good fucking food. I don't give a fuck. Like 20 years ago, if you went to Pittsburgh, you starved. If you went to Iowa for 4 days and you were from New York, you fucking starved. I left New York in 83 when it was hard to leave New York. when New York was New York. I went to Colorado. You want to talk about fucking no food? And, you know, these people eating cheeseburgers and shit and turkey with cranberry. But, I mean, you blew my fucking mind today, bro. You really.
Thank you,
man. You got this shit down. You're a bad motherfucking Jew. I like you.
Thank you, man. Thank you, man.
I'm a Cuban Jew. I don't fuck around either, though.
Thank you, man. I love you.
You should go out to eat while you're in town.
Totally.
There's only like 8 fucking Cuban Jews left.
Actually, I know a Cuban, and I fucked it up with her. I met her one time. We were shooting down to Miami briefly, and I had just gotten like really harshly dumped. And I was shooting at Joe Stonecrab, and I had my my mom one side, of course, my stepmom, who, you know, there's a little bit of friction there, needless to say. And then she and her friends and family came in at the same time for the same taping. I'm running back and forth.
This is that Super Bowl thing. Room.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This was all the support shit, all the other restaurants. And this girl's mom was like standing there on the phone to my stepmom. She's like, I'll wait. And I'm like, this is family. I'll come to you. She's like, all right, come over. I want to introduce you to my daughter. And she's like, yep, she is a cute. Literally, mother goes, she is a Cuban Jew. She was cute.
God, there's a joke just sitting there to be told. But I don't know what it is. It's like a quick joke, but I don't know what it is. You rolling out, brother? Grab your, make sure you get your cookies. Awesome. Oh, yeah. All these motherfuckers bought Girl Scout cookies. That's why they came over.
Girl Scout cookies.
They
absolutely safe.
Hey, love you, brother. Thank you. I leave Tuesday morning. I'll see you before Tuesday. All right.
Okay. Do you have to, like, listen to it and edit all of this?
I don't edit any of this. I did the first one I edited and I fucked it up. But so I just let it go. See you, Joey. People like hearing the authenticness of someone getting in and kind of talking, and you know, I enjoy it. Like, I like the theater of the mind when, you know, someone walks in a room and you're like, wait, who is that? And it's fun.
I almost farted into the mic just to do it.
Oh, can I ask you this now you said that? I've always
wow. No, you can't.
It's been on my mind. So I hate that. I've spoken to like some competitive eaters before about how they train and what they and the, I know you're not, you know, in that competition, but you've done that style thing, right?
Sure, sure, sure.
So all of them told me that when they're training, when they're eating these crazy amounts of food, that they always throw up, right? After, you know, when they're done, don't let it pass. Did you know that before? Do you do that? And like when you eat like a crazy amount of food,
I would do cleanses that I got from my physician, and they were really intense and thorough. And I assure you, I was empty. I understand their point about don't letting it pass. Here's the thing. Reverse peristalsis, because there is definitely that school of thought of just like they just puke it up right away, right?
Right.
Here's the problem, though. First of all, as someone with no aspirations to do that, like the iFoce guys, and I'm not saying that they all do it. I don't presume to know that, and I never heard that, but I assumed in a lot of cases that's what happens.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know. I realized I was saying something super inflammatory. This is what the
No. It's obviously for me, you know, it's always like a hot topic because I get, you know, asked bathroom questions by fucking, I'm not putting you in this category, but like I get like,
are you saying I'm like Magic Johnson right now?
That was the no look pass of questions you asked me. No, but real talk. I just, for me, I figured, well, I spoke to my doctor about that. And the first thing, you know, like I saw a bunch of doctors before I even taped. So I started, that's really comforting, by the way. Bert's daughter is standing behind him with a fireplace lighter. Like, oh, Jesus Christ. Making the Ringu face. It's awesome.
Keep answering the question.
No, it's okay. As long as your priorities, you're still hoping she has an overdose.
Oh, my God.
Give that back to mommy.
Jesus Christ.
Sorry. I totally dropped dime on this little girl, but she's freaking me out with the lighter.
Fucking six-year-old that lives like she's got 1 month to live.
But my doctor said, I went to a bunch of doctors ahead of time because my rationale was let me get a baseline of health and then strive to maintain that rather than repair damage.
Okay.
And that, I think, has really proven to be the biggest difference. Starting certain supplements, certain vitamins before, And I know that I probably would have put less weight on during the course of doing the show had I probably thrown up more. And I remember blatantly asking, I'm like, should I just get Ipecac? Like, he's like, no. As a physician, there is no way I will advise you. Because remember, I shot 59 of these. And before I had really great reps like I do now, like they would put me doing four episodes on a row and doing a challenge and then having to go back and pack and handle my own wardrobe and all this stuff. And like, so after I do this, and remember, every challenge was preceded by
you eating
8 hours of shooting
for
either an empty stomach. And then before that, yeah, then the days before that.
So you were like going through amazing, like intolerable discomfort, right? Doing
it was just exhausting, like the toll it was taking on my body. And then once the show got popular, and to the degree that it got popular, it was a blessing. But as somebody who is, by his own admission, way too freaking sensitive, like to suddenly have the scrutiny and the attention and the love and the hate and equal parts and trying to wrap your head around being quote unquote fucking famous or whatever that is, and always trying to be humble and always trying to be real and true to yourself and true to your friends and true to like what made you a success, and doing all that shit and trying to wrap your head around it and try not to respond to every schmuck on Twitter. At the same time, it's literally, I'm not even kidding you, we shot Columbus, Austin, Amarillo, Chicago. I think we had a day off in Chicago, and we shot straight. So that was like 8 to 10 hours shooting at the Thurman Cafe, eating. Then shooting at Smith's Sausage House, eating. Then this, and this is before I knew what to do. And then shoot for 8 hours, and I just wouldn't eat. And then try to like take out the sandwich. So I finally went to a doctor, and I said, listen, there has to be an efficient way. And he said, it's meant to go that way, and we'll help you get it out that way. I'm pointing from head to toe right now, ladies and gentlemen. But he's like, it'll rot your teeth out, burn your esophagus out terribly.
Throat cancer. It's a fucking nightmare.
Well, to that point, the guy, the competitive eater, told me that the reason he actually had to quit, you know, was because the damage he was doing to his esophagus from all the throwing up.
For me, my big thing was because I was doing these flushes and I was very disciplined about doing them, very, very disciplined about doing them. And they, trust me, they're not sexy. And like, I was always jealous because like my crew would go out. I remember doing it after the...
so fucking pissed.
Dude, after the fifth third burger, the one that I had to eat between the seventh inning stretch and the end of the game, I couldn't believe I took the burger out. And man, I stayed and I signed fucking autographs for every single person in that stadium, feeling like death, right? Went back to the hotel, delirious with bloat, because you drink this stuff and it bloats you out and it brings water and then you just empty out.
I can't.
How sick have you must have felt.
And so I'm then like, they're telling me where they are, like, hey, we're going out to whatever. And then they'll be like, we'll bring you back something. And at this point,
Beanie. Fuck Beanie. Let me tell you something.
So they're like going out, and then they're like, dude, this waitress last night, so hot. So hot. She had the best ass. She was so cute.
This, by the way, this is...
She found out what we were shooting?
True. I would... When they were off shooting, which was like barely ever, I would steal these crew members. So I partied with these guys and they were like, yeah, yeah, man, it really, they felt genuinely bad for Adam. Cause he'd get done a challenge, get on a plane, go to the next place. And it was all over, fucking starting all over again. But Eric Beanie was our sound guy. We shared him at certain times.
2-time Emmy winner, Eric Beanie.
He is one of the funniest fucking guys.
Eric's the funniest member of the crew.
But he is hands down, and he's the guy that would be like, hey, we're going to go out to eat, Adam. We'll bring you something back. Like,
no, but not trying to be a badge. Yeah. Not trying to be a douche about it. Like, they would leave and, like, try to, like, involve me and stuff. And they would go, oh, dude, yeah. Man, and I remember I was, like, on the road, and people think that it was just because I read, like, my Twitter feed that it's just, like, a honey dripper on the road, and it's not like that. And they're like, yo, man.
So is
the waitress was so hot, and then she found out what we were shooting, and she was like, oh, is Adam coming? And I was like,
he's throwing up right now. He's really sick.
He's in the hotel room getting really good on FIFA on his iPad.
How good are you at that? What level do you play at?
FIFA on my iPad?
Yeah.
I like semi-pro, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. You're not like, okay. It's so. Have you played it?
No.
It's.
I don't believe it's
on the iPad.
4 hours a night. Yeah, on my iPad.
Yeah, dude. Addicted.
It's fucking the best.
What is it called?
FIFA World. The soccer game.
FIFA 13.
You just play with your fingers.
Yeah, you just play on the screen. It's super. Like you'll sign up for a tournament. You're like, I may make these quarters or these halves a little longer, and then you'll start playing tournaments where you're like, holy shit, I've been playing fucking FIFA for like 5 hours straight right now. I just won the Spanish Cup, and I'm going to start a new season.
Like, yeah, FIFA is crazy, and now FIFA. I had it for the Xbox. I'm never really home.
Yeah,
but I got it, and I really got into like designing characters and like creating characters.
Yeah,
I created like this fictional three brothers,
mm-hmm.
and they all played for different teams.
Oh,
and like
that's great.
I made them all look the same. It began with a joke with my friend Lauren. We're talking about because it's the truth. Of, you know, I'm a huge soccer fan. Huge.
I did not know that.
Oh, there's a video. I don't know what is that the team.
No. That was the video you're talking about. The video you're talking about is me visiting White Hart Lane, which is where Tottenham Hotspur play. And I'm a Tottenham Hotspur supporter.
Yeah.
And
there's a very popular video of Adam, like, kind of fucking flipping out, like, losing his mind.
As he goes
to the place and he sees, the like, all the things. I I don't follow soccer, so it was kind of like I didn't understand it. But I understand the emotion. But
yeah.
Yeah, I cried. I totally cried.
Really?
I saw the pitch.
Who's your team?
Tottenham Hotspur.
Where's that? I don't even know.
It's North London. They are currently fourth in the Premier League.
Wow.
I just started understanding soccer a tad bit. Enough to get a Manchester United jersey.
You know, so that's how I started too. I got a Man U jersey. Like everyone in America supports pretty much four teams, I find. Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, Man United. And I said, I'm a Man United fan, the very beginning, and I was really following it. I said, yeah, Man U, because they're great. They were the first team I ever played with on my FIFA. Mm-hmm. They are great, tradition of winning. They've got a dynasty, great players. Their manager is a knight, you know. And then my cousin started telling me, oh, yeah, my friend Troy supports Spurs, my Tottenham Hotspur. And I had asked my Twitter followers, what team should I support? Mm-hmm. And they all sent different things. And one guy sent me 100 great goals, Tottenham Hotspur. Mm-hmm. And I found out that it's also traditionally the team that the Jews in North London traditionally supported.
Okay.
Really?
To such a degree that the fans are called Yids or Yiddos or the Yid Army. The Spurs don't actually like it, but the fans will always say it. And this is really fucked up. But all the Chelsea fans, this is a report I read. During World War II would make gas chamber noises because they knew that a lot of the Tottenham supporters were Jewish. They would go tss, and then they would...
What are you laughing about?
I love that it came right at the Holocaust thing.
Those pretzels.
I know,
John's losing his fucking mind.
Over there too. Like, what's going on?
He's losing his mind, laughing hysterically. And I'm like,
I was just thinking of something else. And then just, I was like, I couldn't. I was like, it's inappropriate to laugh now.
Because he's talking about the Jews and the Holocaust. And John's literally doubled over laughing. And then we go, what is it? He goes, those pretzels.
And I knew, like, I wasn't supposed to. It wasn't appropriate. Like that. Maybe you want to laugh.
That's exactly why I don't eat them, by the way.
How many had you had?
I was so
tapping out. He's tapping out.
I was so curious. I saw him like.
He was laughing. He was crying. Yeah. And I was like, well, he must be a big Tottenham Hotspur fan.
Hotspur.
Tottenham Hotspur fan.
And Jeremy Hotspur. So, and then you said they call them the Yids, and I'm like, this is a pretty intense thing. And John's sobbing over there, laughing. And then, wait, what is it? What's so funny? Those pretzels.
Oh, there's a lot gone.
How many did you eat?
he didn't eat any.
This room was very smoky.
That's why Joey came to the first podcast I ever did was with Joey, my dad, and Buns, and Joe and Tommy. And Joey ate a bunch of pot cookies and asked my dad if he wanted one. My dad is not a pot smoker at all, not at all. My dad's like, oh, maybe. I was like, Dad, you don't want one. Then we come in here and Joey was so fucking high that my dad was had like a whiskey, and he was like, "What is this guy? He's out of his fucking mind. I love him." But they really hit it off. Mostly because my dad lost his dad at a young age, and Joey lost his dad at a young age. So it's, they have that man thing where they like they had to take care of themselves,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, but that was all right. Glad I killed the energy.
You know what I do like? The only thing I do like about soccer, the Premier League, how you can fall out of it.
I like that too.
Like if the NFL did that, they're like the two crappiest teams. Every year, at the okay, you're not in the NFL anymore, and the two best college teams moved up.
Yeah, that that's be, what it is. It's three. Be. It's three, and yeah. What's even cooler is that three get to come up, and that's how it goes from every league. It's relegation and promotion, and that's what's so great that you could be a team like this year, like Swansea from Wales. They are fucking killing it, and they just got into the Premier League last year. West Ham United, who like. Eric Beanie supports,
yeah.
Nick Frost, Ray Winstone, like great team. West Ham United, they were in the Premier League when I started following in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
2012, they were fucking sent down a championship, got promoted. And now they're like in sixth place again, in fifth place. It's I agree with you. And that's why they call, you know, the if you are promoted from the champion the Champions League. So there's Premier, Champions, League One, League Two. And if you're promoted from the Championship League, Empower Championship League to Barclays Premier League, they call it the richest prize in sport. Or it's been called the richest prize in sport, yeah. Because the opportunity to compete on that stage. And you get so much money.
But you got to back it up. You don't win. You go back down. I like that.
I like that too.
What's also kind of interesting is the Champions League, which is the most prestigious because that's the clubs from all over the world.
Yeah, that's crazy. With winning that is insane.
Yeah, that's the clubs from everywhere. The best in England versus the best in Italy versus the best in Norway versus the best in whatever. Those are always what I think is kind of fucked up but kind of interesting is that if you win, you're automatically guaranteed a berth to come back. You don't have to earn it every year. That's why Tottenham, my team, got blown out last year. Chelsea, traditionally, Champions League qualifies certain teams in certain countries because of the level of play. So, like, Ireland can't get a team in. You'll never see an MLS team in because right now Champions has not deemed them on that level of play yet.
Really?
Yeah. So, but in England, the top four teams in the Premier League, go to Champions. Tottenham was in fourth, but because Chelsea won, even though they finished sixth in the league, they get to go back. And Man United, Man City, and Arsenal wow. all got to go to Champions.
Even though they were sixth?
Even though, yeah, and Tottenham was in fourth, but four EPL teams. And the Champions always get to return. But that's why you get to see games where it's Barcelona versus Man United.
Yeah, that's
crazy. And you see the Spanish style of play versus the English
that's
style of
so
play.
So fucking considering.
What is the English style of play?
English, I find.
Oh, I'm thinking of the cheering.
Oh, well, that too.
Dude. I'm thinking of the cheering. Go wait, what is.
I'm talking about on the pitch. On yeah. the pitch. So the Spanish, you know, they play
tiki-taka. So it's very short, 6 to 9 yard passes. And this really interesting rotation that. The Man United coach, Sir Alex Ferguson, he called it the carousel. And they rotate. And they rotate. And all they do is wait for you to fuck up. And then they place their passes, these 6 to 9 yard passes, so clean.
Mm-hmm.
And up front, they've got the best ball handlers in the world. They've got Lionel Messi.
Yeah.
You have Andres Iniesta. And there's this little guy named Xavi that people say, I look like fat Xavi. Which I kind of could take because he's a brilliant central midfielder. He can pass the ball that they say he airmails the ball. And so he's got a great front line. And the British style of play is, I find, traditionally, it's played out of a 4-4-2. And it's the long
ball. So the play starts the defense. Mm-hmm. That's why most captains in England, you see a lot of defensive captains. Vincent Kompany from... Man City, for example. But these defenders, they set up the play and they distribute and then you go on a run. And the trick is to time your run so that you don't get caught offside. So you'll have a midfielder time it. And these guys get paid millions and millions of dollars to just set up these plays so that the ball's already in play by the time these guys go past.
And like Cristiano Ronaldo, who's an $80 million player.
Yeah.
You know, plays left wing for Real Madrid. And the guy, I mean, he's beyond gifted at what he does. And so to see him against a very blocky geometric system, like you don't look back at the Premier League. When's the last time you saw like a British player do a lot of fun little foot stuff?
Yeah.
You see Luis Suarez from Ecuador do that shit. You see Colombian players do that stuff, or Portuguese. But so I think it's a really great thing. Like the British game goes, it's the fastest, it's the closest thing they have to, I think, American football.
Mm-hmm. You mean throw ball?
Yeah.
That's what they call it.
Hand egg.
Throw ball?
Hand egg.
You mean the original one?
If you were to give me a quiz on any of that, if you were to give me a quiz on any of the soccer talk that just happened right here in this room, I would not do well.
It was pretty dorky. I'm sorry about that. That's my problem.
I find it interesting that you're into soccer.
I'm totally, my interest in it is 100%. Due to FIFA on the iPad.
Yep. Like, I back you up on that. I back you up on that. Yeah. That's how I initially got into it.
Yeah, that's totally the fun.
I'm fucking downloading it now. I want to be a soccer
so
fan.
Fun. It's so
it's like
great.
It's like when a girl, when you like, it's like discovering cutting or collecting stamps. Like, I want a new sport.
And
in life.
I have to, you know,
is that a bad analogy?
Not that I'm an expert.
They're in the
on
same
it,
category.
But not that I'm an expert on it. But whenever like you hear about somebody who's once in a generation, like best of an era, is playing in any sport right now, it always makes you want to check it. Like, you know, you could be not a golf fan, but like when Tiger Woods was like in his prime winning every week,
watching
you'd be
him
like,
was
you'd
exciting.
Be like, dude, watch this guy play golf. This is retarded.
Yeah.
Like he's fucking, he wins every week, right? So like arguably when you watch these pieces that people are doing and highlights of Messi right now in Barcelona, like the last few years, like I've been watching, he's on SportsCenter, you know, every other fucking night when they're playing.
You know who that is, Bert?
It's no idea.
Lionel Messi, he's Argentinian. They call him the little wizard. And
it's stupid,
he's
man.
This little guy.
That sounds racist.
It does sound racist.
I don't know if I can support that.
He's number 10 for Barcelona. He's the actual cover guy for 2013 FIFA.
That is, but watch his, go just.
I'm downloading it.
No, but,
you
but
sold
I'm
me.
Saying go to YouTube and type in like Lionel Messi
oh.
goals and it's
that's
incredible.
The one thing that sucks about when they, like SportsCenter, they, like basketball is fun to watch highlights, football is fun to watch highlights. Baseball is like, it's all right. Like the good catches, but those are few and far between.
Yeah.
Soccer highlights are fucking awesome.
Amazing.
Awesome. But it's like there's not enough soccer fans here, so they don't really cover it
yeah.
on SportsCenter.
Yeah.
But well, I just want the highlights.
Or you want them, like, they'll show the most amazing goal, but they'll show, like, the kick, and they'll cut to the next thing. You're like, what about the fucking pass
yeah,
that led to that? Yeah, the setup. Like, go back and show me that shit from, like,
yeah.
nine
the other
angles,
thing
man.
Is, let's just be honest. Think about the games that are really big in America. For the most part, you have football where you're getting 6 points, 7 points. Any given score, 3 points.
Yeah.
So you have games that finish 36-34.
Right.
Basketball, you have games finishing in the 80s and the 100s, stuff like that.
Yeah.
For an American audience to watch any sport continuously for 90 minutes and be satisfied with 1-0,
well, yeah, and it's
you
and,
have to enjoy the game. Yeah, that's the bottom line. Exactly. Is there's not a lot of scoring. That's why when there is a when there is an actual scoring try,
yeah.
then it's such a release because it's a 26-minute buildup.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's yeah. Americans do not have a tolerance. A lot, I should say, not all. Yeah, have a tolerance.
You know, Joey mentioned that earlier. I've been thinking about this TV show because he mentioned it like the buffet where you have one dish
that has something in it.
Okay, here's the show, and the ideal name, sadly, is Man versus Food. But we can't do that.
Because it's already been used.
But it's like,
just
that's what you tell
people.
That's what you tell them. Like, you get guys like, okay, here's the deal. You got to go to this buffet once every 30 minutes. One dish has weed in it. We're going to ask you questions after each course. And the person that can last the longest without us knowing you're high wins $1 million. But the trick is, you put weed in every single dish.
So there's
and
just
you
people.
Just hear them trying to talk like they're not, you know,
like you're talking.
Like, yeah, exactly. You'd never believe he's a successful producer.
No, that's a funny show.
That's a funny. That is a fucking funny show. Was funny. So was my pitch to Sharon Levy, "Can I kidnap your child?" But she did not find that fucking.
No,
fun. No, she passed it, on the title. She passed.
I thought you meant she died.
No, she passed. What time's your heart out, Adam? What time you got to get out of here?
I should probably split pretty soon. My manager, my lovely manager, Miss Eileen Springer of Sherman Oaks, California, has invited me for a home-cooked meal because I've been away from home for a while.
It's actually, something I've always wanted to talk to you about that I don't understand that bothers you, but it does not bother me. Or maybe
have a penis.
Maybe
have a vagina.
Maybe it doesn't really actually bother you, but it was a rumor. But someone said that you don't like, and there's other celebrities that don't like this, when people take pictures of you, like they try to sneak a picture of you.
You know, it's funny.
Because, by the way, I absolutely love that. Like when I'd rather.
I remember you told me, and it's actually your rationale. I used to be a really big douche about that, and I will cop to it. I found it to be super invasive.
Yeah,
I found it to be like, as a big dude, sometimes I don't really think that certain angles are certainly the most flattering, and I think that it just adds more room for derision. And I find it to be a little bit obtrusive. Like, I don't know, when I'm ready, when I feel like taking pictures in before I had a show, like if someone like woke you up in the morning, let's say, or like I was running, you lived in New York.
Yeah.
I'm running to the bodega to get some milk and to get some like Gatorade or whatever. And then run back to my place. And I'm in there like flip flops and this and a sweatshirt and stuff. You know what I mean? And I used to be kind of an asshole about it. I have to admit, not like to my fans, but just really very vigilant and on set. And then I stopped and I realized, one, you said, if people do that, then they don't need to stop you for a picture. They've already gotten a picture.
Yeah, I hate, that's the one thing that drives, not doesn't drive me nuts, but I'd rather someone snap one of me. I'll even mug. I'll even do like lascivious, like make like, ah, like, so they get a better one, because I'd rather the stopping down and then handing off of the camera to someone and then and then here can we take one more like that. I was like, it's so much easier for them to just go snap snap snap, and you're like, no, you got it, all right.
Yeah, no,
I've seen you mug in a photo.
Fuck. That's all I fucking do.
But I've since given up with that. Also, I was just like, it's like I'll have a bigger problem when people no longer want to take pictures of me. So I figured just sort of like let it.
But you went from 0 to 150.
Yeah.
Like, you know, one of the things that was so different in our careers is that I've been doing bullshit pilots for fucking 10 years that never went anywhere. And, like, I would venture to say probably Man vs. Food was one of, like, the fucking – probably one of your first big green light projects. I mean, you were a working actor.
Yeah, but I was doing mostly –
yeah, and so all of a sudden to go from and to be a show that defined a network, and in a weird way to find the programming of that network, and to then be like that. So in your, and I'm not saying in your defense that you need it, but like in your defense, it's a lot to put on a fucking person.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I remember. Did you ever meet Dan Kornfeld? He directed season three of Man vs. Food, and he's great. He's great. Great director, great producer. Dan told me once that in China there's actually a curse, like a negative thing you say to someone. You say, "May all your dreams come true." And you get it a little bit. It's like you want the cash and prizes. This is the exchange.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's college guys getting beer muscles and wanting to like fight with me in ASU, or like people wanting to like touch my stomach, or girls saying obnoxious bathroom stuff to me and stuff. If I want to still, on the other hand, be able to pay off my student loans to Yale, buy my mom a car, save up for a place for myself, have a driver waiting for me to take me back to my hotel, whatever, then the bottom line is that's the trade-off. And it's you can't be a little bit pregnant. And so I've since become significantly less cunty about the pictures. And I just think, look, make myself available, because there'll be a time, God forbid, where I have to wonder about my availability, you know, and will any, you know, and
I know exactly what you're saying.
And you're a product. And I came out of Yale Drama School, and a lot of people were purists, and I just try to be responsible. I can't repackage fucking Manwich's caviar. Like, I know what I am.
Manwich's caviar.
Like, I know what I am. I'm not going to fucking piss on your head and tell you it's raining. Like, I'm very well aware of what my sweet spot is. And I think if I suddenly were competing on Top Chef, I think you'd immediately know I was out of my element. Or if I was judging the great cooks of the world, they'd be like, first they'd burp, and then they would go, apropos of what? They'd be like, who are you to judge?
Although it would be funny if you did do that, and you were like, this was good, it would only be better if there were 15 pounds of it. And then just went to the next person. That was all of your notes.
Et tu, Berté.
Did you think about possibly bringing a wheelbarrow in?
The pictures thing. The pictures thing made you crazy, right? Initially, you said it used to agitate you more. Is that online with? Because I imagine you get a lot of bathroom questions. Hey, what kind of shits do you take? What size?
Yeah.
What do they look like? What's the worst one? Do you have like a go-to? Like, do you go like?
You had four very specific ones.
Well, those are all been in my head. I wanted to ask them for the last couple hours, but
a la Magic Johnson.
Yeah, like magic. But that's just a topic that really genuinely interests me. Like, I'm not saying it. Like you know, I have this conversation with everybody. Is what I'm saying.
Tom's first Vine was a picture of him taking a shit.
I always tell people, like, you know, anything really bathroom stuff, I'll discuss with, you know, my physician. I still think that's, you know.
But is that what, do you go, I'll save it for my doc. Is that like your go-to passing response?
Generally speaking, or like this one guy, like, said something trying to be funny in front of a bunch of chicks in Boulder, like trying to like clown me. And I was just like, this is not going to happen. I said, all right, let me get this straight, man. So you are genuinely interested in the anus of a stranger that is a grown man. You want to know what, because he was like, what's your butthole like? And he's like, I'm sorry, I need to know. I'm like, so what you need
what's
to
your
know,
like?
You need to know what another grown man's anus is like. That's what you're interested in? And I was like, girls, this is a guy you want to hang out with, or would you rather come have a drink with me and my friends?
Boom.
Yeah. He was there, and I was like, I know you think you're funny, but you're being rude and disrespectful. I was like, it's cool, man. It's cool. I'm like, it's not cool. I don't like you. And when you watch my show, know that I don't like you.
That's the fucking craziest thing is I saw a long time ago, I saw Adam Sandler in that Diary of, and he apparently has horrible road rage. And I was like, I wonder how many times like he's fucking loses his mind driving, and people are like, hey, it's Adam Sandler. And he's like, oh, yeah, look, take a left, asshole. Yeah.
He's got bad road rage.
In Diary, this was.
Well, you can see the guy has rage in him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you've seen it over the years. Like, when you can pull that rage out like that, that's in you, you know? Like, that's one of his kind of.
So, when are you going to start a podcast, Adam?
When am I going to start? I need to update my website.
Do a podcast. I'm telling you. Do a podcast.
I will. Oh, yo. New series, homie.
Oh, yeah. When does it start?
I start taping it in Daytona on the 22nd. The network wants to call it Fandemonium, so I think we're going to be calling it Fandemonium.
And you're basically you're
pick
going
a fan of anything, fan of Lebowski Fest, a Star Trek fan, Star Wars fan.
So
they were foreseeing it to be a largely tailgate show.
Yeah,
but not every type of fandom lends itself to tailgating, Renaissance festivals and so on, Civil War reenactments, but. Those people are fans, and they dedicate themselves just as hard as the most avid Raven fan or Dolphin fan. So we are going to go around and give fans the ultimate fan experience, whatever that is. So in Daytona, we're going to basically give a family that's been going to Daytona for years.
Oh, the Daytona.
On a certain thing. Yeah, the Daytona race is happening. And the thing is, it's not about, you know, Pimp My Tailgate as much as it is, I don't know. I mean, I'm like a Dolphin fan. I'm a Hotspur fan. I spend money on my web memberships and watching the games, and there are much more avid fans. And I think that those guys who do a lot need to get a thank you. And I think it's actually really kind of cool to like surprise people.
That'd be fucking great.
Like to do a man cave, but for someone's fan experience.
Yeah, that's fucking awesome. When's that? You don't know when it premieres? Cool.
I don't know when it premieres, but I pray to God I don't mess up taping the first 10 episodes.
Oh, you're going
to
fucking kill it.
You know, a show that has premiered.
What is that, John?
That's be the Joe Schmo Show, Tuesday nights, 10 p.m. on Spike.
John Moore is your executive producer. He wrote all the jokes.
The finale coming up March 5th.
Tommy Buns.
Tom Segura. TomSegura.com. I posted a bunch of new dates for April and May, so come check me out. I'll be at a club near you, at Tom Segura on Twitter. And you can watch that shit video on Vine. It was really nice to meet you, Adam.
Great to meet you as well.
Really interesting.
I hope you do the magic stuff on stage, because that shit is funny.
Oh, okay, cool. Thank you, man. I might do that, actually.
I think that Magic Johnson bit is funny. So.
Check out Joey Diaz's shit online. He was here. I'm Bert Kreischer.
And good night, Moby.
Good night, Moby.